10 on November the 2nd, 2016. I will call the Dallas City Council briefing meeting to order. Welcome all for being here. We will have our invocation, and following our invocation, Ms. Arnold will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Our invocator this morning is Reverend Kelvin Stepney of the New Generation Missionary Baptist Church in Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Wilson's District 8. He has served as the third pastor of the church and has been there for over 11 years. He is a proud graduate of Wilmer Hutchins High School and was ordained as a minister in 1996. Furthered his studies at the Southern Bible Institute, Edwin Johnson Institute, Trinity Valley Baptist Seminary, and Criswell College. He uses his platform to share his Word of God and offer encouragement and support in the community. Reverend Stepney was married to the late Zandra Stepney and is a proud parent of four daughters. Currently serves as the Revival Chairman and Chairman of the Young Pastoral Experience Panel for the Oak Cliff Baptist Ministers Union. Reverend Stepney, thank you so much for being here. All rise.
Let us bow. God of all creation, thank you for all of your many wonderful blessings. We acknowledge that every good and perfect gift comes from you. Thank you for our wonderful mayor, our brave police officers, our city council members, and all our city officials in this great city of Dallas, Texas. I ask if you would continue to give our leaders unity and wisdom as they work together for the advancement of our great city. Bless this meeting today. May every decision made today be in accord with your approval and sanctioned with your grace. I pray for all the wonderful citizens of Dallas, Texas. May the spirit of love and unity reign throughout our city. May we be a pattern and example to our state, our country, and our world of what can be accomplished when we work together in brotherly love. We ask that your presence, your peace, and your power would dwell among us in this meeting today. And we ask these blessings in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend. I appreciate it, and thank you, Ms. Arnold. Council, we have a new arrival to the city of Dallas, and I wanted you to meet him. He is the new director of the Dallas Museum of Art. Dr. Augustine Arteaga, would you please come on up? The good doctor has formerly served as the director of the Museo Nacional de Arte in Mexico City. He's one of the premier art authorities on Latin American art, but also worldwide art throughout the world, so we're very lucky to get him. Prior to his tenure at the museum in Mexico City, Dr. Arteaga was the director of the Museo de Arte de Ponce in Puerto Rico, and a founding director of the Contemporary Art Museum, Museo de Arte Latin Mexico de Buenos Aires in Argentina. So our esteemed search committee looked the world over and found this great leader. We're happy to have you. I thought since he's such an important part of our city that the council would like to meet him. So thank you for being here. And how's it going after just a couple of months?
Fantastic.
Great.
It's a fabulous city and a great institution. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. If you have anything to say, please.
Well, I do.
Please.
Yeah. I certainly appreciate the council to receiving me here today. I very much appreciate your kind invitation. I think that we have in the Dallas Museum of Art one of the greatest assets of this city that brings together everyone from every place in the cities and surrounding North Texas. And what we do there is really advancing the quality of life of all our citizens, and also bringing a great spotlight to this fantastic, thriving city that is Dallas. And I am certainly honored to be the Eugene McDermott director. I think that it's a privilege that a lot of people would like to have, and I'm committed totally to serve our citizens, our city, and to make of this institution, even if possible, better than what my predecessors have already achieved, which is really difficult. But I'll take the challenge, and I'm really honored to be part of this new community to me, which is home now.
Well, thank you so much, and I think you and your husband have figured out where you're living now, right? And
well, I may be your neighbor.
Okay.
No, and I'm talking about City Hall. I will probably be living very close. Yes,
very close to here.
Downtown.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good to have you, and thank you. I just when you have a chance, stop in and see him down at the DMA. And it's an important part of our city. So
it would be a privilege to invite you all to come and visit, and to show you once again, because I'm sure that you all have been there, what are all those extraordinary treasures that we hold and care and steward for the benefit of everyone in this city.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Greggs,
I just wanted to say personally welcome, bienvenido, and happy Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Griggs, I think you had a presentation.
Yes. Well, good morning. I'm pleased to announce an award that the Oak Cliff Streetcars received from the American Society of Civil Engineers. So I got a couple people from city staff. They're going to come up here and help me tell you a little bit about this award. First, we've got Frank Honeycutt. Oh, here he is. He's fine. Well, come on up here. Don't be shy. Just jump on around here. He's not going to grab you or anything. All right. So I understand you're going to give an overview of the award and what all's been done.
Yes, there will actually be several of us here. Let's
do it.
Okay. As Councilman Murray said, my name is Frank Honeycutt. I work in the newly formed Mobility and Street Services Department. We have, as you know, this is a collaborative effort with DART. So we have Evelino Hernandez with DART. I wanted to make sure that we didn't forget Mr. Luis Salcido here in the back. Was part of the grassroots organization that called themselves the Oak Cliff Transit Authority. Without that organization, we probably wouldn't be here as well. And then we have several people from the Texas section of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and then also the Dallas section. And so if I can ask Frank Pugsley to come on.
Good morning. I'm Frank Pugsley. I'm president of the Dallas branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers. I just want to first thank everyone for giving us a brief moment to present the city and DART with this Outstanding Civil Engineering Achievement Award. ASCE represents more than 150,000 members in 177 countries worldwide, and founded in 1852, it's the nation's oldest engineering society. In a brief overview of our Outstanding Civil Engineering Achievement Award, annually, the Texas section awards one project as the OCEA. This prestigious award honors the project that best illustrates superior civil engineering skills and represents a significant contribution to engineering progress and society. The award honors a project overall instead of an individual, so it celebrates the contributions of many. The Union Station to Oak Cliff Dallas Streetcar Project was awarded the 2016 Texas Section Outstanding Civil Engineering Achievement Award. Just to put that into a little context, some past local winners include the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge, Cowboys Stadium, and the North Central Texas Expressway redevelopment project. And one interesting or big piece of news that we have just recently been approved by ASC National to discuss here is that this project is actually one of the top five finalists for the National Award this year, which is a huge honor. And I think just to put that into context again, one of the other finalists is One World Trade Center, and that had a project cost of $3.9 billion. So our, you know, $30 to $40 million project locally, you know, just it's a great honor to be considered alongside that. And this, the National Award is an international award as well. So there's a lot of other great projects up running with our project. So it's a fantastic honor. And with that, I'd like to welcome Mr. Ramon Miguez, Area Manager from HDR Engineers, the design engineers on the project.
Good morning, Mayor, Council Members, Mr. City Manager. I'm here representing the design-build team that was involved in the design and construction facility. And it's a real pleasure to stand before you today and represent HDR and the Stacy Whitbeck Carcon design-build team that had the opportunity and the honor of working on this landmark project. Taking those first steps is always the hardest, and I want to acknowledge Mr. Sacedo for having the vision, along with his partners. This 1.6-mile Union Station Oak Cliff-Dallas streetcar line was the first step in the most critical segment of the city's modern streetcar system. The connection over the mile-long Houston Street Viaduct, which is a historic landmark bridge and serves as a vehicular link between Oak Cliff and downtown Dallas. In case you didn't know, the original 1910-built bridge was, in fact, designed or at least intended to have streetcar service on it. However, it was never developed at the time. The Dallas Streetcar Project has been locally and nationally recognized since its opening. The cars are full and dark this month, increased service time because of demand. The Bishop Arts Extension into the heart of Oak Cliff opened just a few weeks ago, and the streetcar momentum continues. I applaud you for the vision and courage in taking the first step and encourage you all to ride the Dallas Streetcar. Again, thank you for this opportunity to have worked on this significant project. At this time, I want to call Curtis Beidle, who's the immediate past president of the American Society of Civil Engineers for the Texas section.
Thank you, Ramon. And as Frank mentioned earlier, you know, we've also got the news of the project being selected as one of the top five finalists for the 2017 Global Outstanding Civil Engineering Achievement Award, a very high honor that will be announced at a gala event in Washington, D.C. in March. So we'll all be crossing our fingers that a Texas project can win that high honor. It does have a lot of competition, but pound for pound, I think it wins. It is the best project. Dollar for dollar, absolutely. So now it's my pleasure, as the delegated representative of the President and Board of Direction of the Texas Section of the American Society of Civil Engineers, to present the 2016 Outstanding Civil Engineering Achievement Award to the City of Dallas and Dallas Area Rapid Transit for the Union Station to Oak Cliff Dallas Streetcar Project.
Well, thank you. This is a real honor for everyone who is involved at the City of Dallas. First off, I do want to thank OCTA, the Oak Cliff Transit Authority, Jason Roberts, Brandon Bolin, Luis Salcedo for all your work, especially you and Jason going to a basement of a forgotten building to find the original 1908 and 1910 plans of the Houston Viaduct that showed that a streetcar could go on it. I want to thank everyone in Oak Cliff for their support, particularly AC Gonzalez, who worked a lot on this project, Jill Jordan, who worked a lot on it at times, Mark McDaniel, Ryan Evans. So it was certainly a team project to get this done on time and on budget, and is going to be a great project in the future, and it is the small project that could. I remember initially we went up just to get the Tiger Grant up against 1,500 projects nationwide, and it was selected to get things going. Then we had the help of EVJ to put some money into it, had help from others to get the people mover money from Love Field over to it. So this project, if we knew all the moving parts it would have at the beginning and the time involved and the complexity, we certainly would have thought it was impossible, but it certainly was the little streetcar that could, and we're grateful for it being up and running. And so it's a great honor to accept this award on behalf of the City of Dallas. So I think it's time for a quick photo. If everyone wants to come on up, and certainly AC and Jill, Mark, and Ryan, and I've left a few people off while you're walking off. I can't. Keith Manoy, who was at the City of Dallas, This wouldn't have been possible without his help either. There are so many people involved in this. And then, Louis, if you want to come on up here also.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs. Thank you for your leadership on that. Ms. Arnold I asked Ms. Arnold to kind of step in as the council's and the mayor's representative on veteran issues, and so she has a couple of announcements.
Just quickly, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Mayor, quickly on the Veterans Day announcement, and I will move quickly. I know that we have a short period of time, but I'm extremely happy to have the opportunity to serve as chairwoman, if you will, of the Veterans Task Force. One of the events that we will kick off, we have several pre-events, and so this morning, actually at noon, we're going to have a quick press conference to recognize Veterans Day activities, but also to focus this morning on all military veterans here in the city of Dallas. So I'll make that announcement known. We've sent out communications. All individuals who have served this great country, male, female, we're asking you to come to the flag room today. We'll have a quick announcement, and we'll also have refreshments, and we want you to know that we appreciate your service, not only to this great country, but to this great city as well. Also, next week on November 10th, District 4 will be the site of a pre-Veterans Day activity in terms of a parade. Now, I've shocked several people, I realize that, with the announcement. But that community houses, if you will, the Veterans Hospital. It's the core, and Lancaster Corridor is the core in which the Veterans Hospital is seated. So we'll have festivities next week beginning at 11 o'clock, a mini parade, if you will, to pay tribute to our veterans through this country and this city. We'll have several schools involved, and I tell you, it is going to be something to write about, blog about, tweet about, talk about, sing about, but most of all, to be proud of the fact that we have the corridor that houses our veterans, and we want to be a service. And I want to just right now take privilege for those veterans who are here with us this morning. Mr. Gonzalez, I know that you are. Would you raise your hand if you are a veteran, a military veteran, have served? You're the only person here this morning? Oh, well, we're going to give you a round of applause. Who's behind? All right, come on. Come on. You know I have to have your name. Give us your name right quick. So come on over here with me. We're taking executive privilege today. Come on.
Sergeant Rob Michaleski.
All right.
United States Marine Corps.
Okay, just those two. All right. So we have more. And then Friday we'll have the traditional parade, which will kick off from here at City Hall, so I'll be there as well. So we're very proud of the fact that we're stepping forward. Now this morning, Mayor, quickly what I asked, yesterday we had an opportunity to spend time with members of Harvey Martin's team and his board Dream Foundation. So I'm going to ask them to come up real quickly now to be with me in the limelight here. Now, the mayor is really good about time, so you all have to hurry. But no, I'm just teasing. But we do have a lot of business. But Mrs. Martin, Mr. Harvey Martin's sister is kind of shy. We have other board members. Come on down. So I want the community to know who you are. Yesterday, as I said, we had the kickoff of the Harvey Martin Dream Foundation, and it is centered in District 4. So, you know, I had to take the opportunity to recognize this foundation for doing more in District 4. Mr. Harvey Martin left behind a responsibility and a task for his sister to carry through his dream, and the dream being to continue to fight for education, to continue to put the message in the minds of those individuals who feel sometimes that they cannot go to school. So this foundation will serve as a gap to bridge the gap so that those individuals who don't have the financial capabilities to help them to reach that goal. Now, yesterday, Mr. Brad Sham was also with us, and so that was an opportunity for me to experience firsthand someone who has lived and promoted the legacy. Roosevelt, South Oak Cliff and Roosevelt are two schools in District 4. They will be targeted by the Dream Foundation. Mr. Harvey Martin was a South Oak Cliff graduate, and I have been given the responsibility of giving this message. It's the Bear Cave, and those are my instructions, so we need to understand that it's part of the Bear Cave, and so that legacy still lives on. And for those of you who have read the newspapers, you know that South Oak Cliff alumni, the Bears, are still fighting for equity and educational opportunities for those students here at SOC. Also was given a task, understanding at East Texas State, he also left his footprints as a Kappa, member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. And I know we have Kappas here in the building. Raise your hand. One right. Well, all right, the Kappas. I've been given those instructions, so he left his trademark there. Last but not least, we know he was a member of the Dallas Cowboys. But I think above everything that he's left behind, his sister Mary, and if you could just give us about 30 seconds, he's given her that challenge, and we want to be a support for you in this city, and we're going to continue to fight for equal opportunity for all students. But education is the key, and it is the key that will open up the doors to any student as long as they're willing to take that step. So I'm going to ask if you just step here and just give us a little bit. I know, hello. Come on down, because he would want you to do that.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mary Martin. And I'm really proud to be here, and I'm very happy you invited us, and I need your support.
Okay.
The Harvey Martin Dream Foundation was created because Harvey wanted to give back to the community. He wanted to give back to the youth of the community to help them possibly not experience some of the life experiences he had. We discussed that, however, as busy as Harvey was, we decided that we would create something which didn't happen because of Harvey's demise. Harvey passed away in 2001 from pancreatic cancer, and it took me a while to really get moving again because it was only Harvey and I. So our passion is we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. What we're trying to do is target marginal students, those that really want to attend college. However, there may be some learning disability that hasn't been addressed, and we want to be able to connect those students, because if we can help them to figure out, along with their parents, to figure out why they're unable to do more than a 2.5 GPA, then I think that we can really capture a lot of the students that could will go to college because of us. Harvey was passionate about that. I'm passionate about that. And I just hope that we are exposed enough that everyone knows what we're really trying to do and that we can get the support
Great.
From everyone.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you, Mayor, and thank you to Council. Thank you for all of you for being patient. And guess what? We don't have to take a photo.
Thank you.
All
thank
right.
You. Hi, thank you, Ms. Arnold. With that, we will begin our morning speakers.
Thank you. We do have a cancellation. Therefore, your five registered speakers this morning will be Anne Marie Wisman, Anne Marie Bristow, Jed Anastasimbu, Brandon Miller, and Deborah Swanson. I'll cite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on the monitor. When your time is up, please stop and address your comments only to Mayor Rollins. If you have handouts, you may go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Anne Marie Wiseman.
I live at 802 Haynes Avenue, and I would like to speak about the homeless issue. Right now, a lot of money is on the table to deal with the homeless. What Scott said about shelter, like in the jail or something, should be considered. I spoke before on using the empty portable buildings from the schools that we paid for with taxpayers' money, and they've been maintained by a fee every year, that we use them. We could use them for so many emergency sheltering. Just we could put families in there. When they put so much money on things, it's usually somebody benefits. Not every homeless needs housing. Are they homeless then? If they have a house, are they still homeless? The other thing is, how many churches do we have in this city, and how many nonprofits do we have in this city that deal with the homeless? Why hundreds? I know it's hundreds. We have 800 some homeless we deal with. Why don't they take a few of them and take care of them? And maybe it gets solved. I work at the parks. I actually volunteer at the parks, and I deal with homeless all day long. They are so different one from another. One is broken, one is fine, one is a drunk, one is mean, just like people outside. We have to deal with them differently. We have to build public restrooms, not just for the homeless, but for everybody. We are not in the 18th century anymore, where it's not talked about. We have to use bathrooms. In the parks, the children, we have to wash our hands afterward. Why can we not deal with that? Why is it such a forbidden subject? You try to go to a park and go to a bathroom, you can get there. And I find where they use the bathroom behind the rose bushes. I don't think that's safe for children, for anybody. Anyway, thank you.
Ma'am, will you please state your name for the record?
Hmm? I think this is Ms. Bristow.
Anne Marie Bristow?
Anne Marie Bristow.
Thank you.
I thought you said my name. I thought that was it.
That's fine.
Thank you. Anne Marie Wiseman?
Now we got another Anne Marie.
Hi. It's fine. It's not often that name gets confused. Thank you so much. Good morning, and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak. I live and work here in Dallas, and I am a member of the Dallas chapter of Showing Up for Racial Justice, or SURGE. We partner with local and national activist organizations to contribute our voices and actions as white people to the struggle to end racism. Today, I'm here on behalf of Mothers Against Police Brutality and the reforms that they have proposed, which you can see in their entirety on their website. Today, I'd like to discuss one reform in particular, which is the status of a police officer after a fatal shooting or excessive use of force. When an officer shoots a person to death, there's an investigation that ensues, and the question for the investigators is whether that officer followed standard procedure for the use of deadly force in the way that is authorized by the public. This is important because if they have abused their authority, or their use of deadly force is unnecessary or unjust, we need to know that. And this question of whether an officer has committed what in effect accounts for state-sponsored murder remains open until the grand jury issues either a no bill or an indictment. So to me, it makes sense to keep such an officer off of regular armed duty until all levels of the investigation into the deadly incident are complete. This is the policy change that MAPB is proposing. In current practice, Dallas officers are frequently returned to armed duty before the DA or the grand jury have conducted their reviews. This is a change that could be adopted under existing laws. You guys could do this within a week. Personally, in my experience, I've had nothing but positive experiences with Dallas police officers. I have friends in law enforcement, and I understand that there are a lot of pressures that go along with the job. However, I'm here as a matter of conscience because there's ample evidence to suggest that people who do not look like me do not experience the same good experiences as I do. And I believe that racism is endemic, and I believe that institutional reform is a powerful tool that we can use to oppose racism in our society. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Jed Anantasambu.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you. A little nervous being up here. I represent the Friends of Dallas Asian American Cultural Center. First off, I'd like to thank the mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, and the deputy mayor, Pro Tem, for supporting us and helping us in these efforts. I know a lot of you have seen studies. There was a study back in 2010, the master plan, that talked about the Asian Cultural Center. What I'm passing out around now is what we put together the last few months, and in fact, a few weeks, of updated budgets. What you guys seen in the past talked about building on 10 acres, building 44,000 square feet, and that was a study that was done about 10 years ago, or sorry, 2010. So we've updated it since then, and what we're looking at now is we're actually in the process of negotiating over land, about 5 acres of land. Our goal is to build about 25,000 square feet, and with that, on the second page, we'll have the budget. The Asian American community is a fast growing community. It's got a growth rate of about 7% in the North Texas area with a lot of companies moving in. And we look at this as a center that we can do economic development, have, you know, music performances, and have this center where we can share our cultures with everybody. And that's kind of our goal with all of this. And you know, this is only 3 pages. I know that master plan out there is a few hundred pages, so hopefully we'll get you more information. And I'd love an opportunity to meet with any of you that are interested in hearing more about it. The next couple months, we're hoping to secure the land, which I know is the biggest piece. And if it gets approved on the bond, I know our portion of it is 25%. The city would put in 75%. The overall project that we're looking at would require the city to put in about $12.5 million, which is a lot less than what you have seen in the previous council briefings. Again, I'm here to answer any questions if that's necessary.
Thank you very much for coming down. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Brandon Miller. Mr. Miller will be followed by Deborah Swanson.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. I'm also here representing a surge or showing up for racial justice, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Mothers Against Police Brutality as well. As you can all know, it's been a hot-button issue, and it would be a tall order to sum up criminal justice reform in 3 minutes. But what we would like to propose today is drug testing for police officers after a fatal shooting. As you're all aware, the status of the drug test of the victim is put into the media almost immediately after the incident. We would like to increase transparency between the community and the police force by having these drug tests of police officers done after their involved shooting. Just like if they were in a car and involved in an accident, we would drug test them just to give enlightenment to the state of mind, explain to the incident, so that we might know, you know, why this happened. Is there any fault? We don't think it is unreasonable to have this done for police officers. Now, it's important that we do have that transparency, so when this is done, a police officer is not held liable for, you know, being violent. We can see, oh, well, they didn't have any drugs in their system. I don't think it should be something that can't be done. It's been done, in fact, in St. Louis as early as this year, January of this year. They test not only for accidents involving vehicles, but for use of firearms. I think it would be important for Dallas to be on the forefront of this issue. With Mothers Against Police Brutality, you can see they do have a 9-point plan to help rebuild trust between communities and the police force. Now, I don't necessarily live in Dallas. I live in Mesquite, zip code 75149. However, I work in Dallas regularly, friends and family in Dallas, and I would like to see the tensions between communities and the police force resolved so that people of color and those who have been victims of police brutality have justice and transparency. Thank you for your time. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Deborah Swanson.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Swanson. I'm just a single mom. I'm just a simple mom. Just a layperson, local school bus driver. What I'd like to see is for the council to consider putting in, like, loading school zones for bus stops. The school bus stops are not actually visual. We come to stops at thoroughfares and corridors where, you know, the streets meet, but I'm getting so many drivers that ignore the stop signs. Then they try to come around the bus and go on the opposite side. If you guys could really help us out and implement something like a school loading zone, just to let drivers know ahead of time that there are kids that are loading the buses. It is so dangerous. I had a small child on National School Bus Week to almost be killed. And I sit there and watch, and I can do nothing but scream and call on God. But if you guys would just help us out and help me implement where we'll have just a sign, just to implement, you're entering a school loading zone. Or just DART has signs all the time, DART stop. We don't have bus stop signs, school bus signs. We need those. And if you guys would just consider it, I'm nobody. I'm just a concerned mom that transports over 200 babies a day. And they're your babies, they're your grandkids, and I want them safe. And if you would just work with me and consider it, just a simple sign could make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for taking our babies around.
That concludes your morning speakers. We'll now move to the first item on the voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the October 19, 2016 City Council meeting.
A motion. We got a second. Any discussion, changes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Item 2, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we only have a vice chair appointment. Kim Kohler is being nominated as vice chair to the Municipal Library Board by Councilmember Gates.
Do we have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Motion. Second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, your briefings follow.
Thank you very much. We'll begin with briefing A. Mr. Gonzalez.
Mayor and Council, this morning we're going to be hearing about our Communications and Policy Institute, which is an enhancement of our capacity to be able to address the production of more information that can be put out to the public. But really, at the urging of the council and that we, and as the staff has felt in many different ways, we have been looking for opportunities to partner with our educational institutions as well to see about how we can advance the aspect of growing our community in a to be more well-educated. And in this particular project, that has developed into a situation of partnerships with DISD as well as several of the local universities. Sana is going to be going over the presentation and would be providing some opportunity for some of those representatives to tell you about how excited they are about the possibilities of this project. Sana.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We're very excited to be here today. We have a brief presentation on some plans that we have, updates on a project that we have
been
talking to
you about. Hold that mic just a little closer to you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We're going to update you on some plans that we've talked to you about over the course of 2 years, but first I want to let you know who all I have with me and some folks that we have in the audience joining us today. Right next to me is Chris Mathis. He's a manager over our Dallas City News cable channels. I have Dr. White. He is with Lincoln High School. And Dr. Crowder, he's with Skyline High School. These are a couple of teachers that we've been working very closely with on this program. In the audience, I'd also like to recognize Kim Conkle with SMU, Maurice West with Paul Quinn, Principal Jonna Weaver with Lincoln High School, Ms. Sheila Walker with Lincoln High School, Teacher Tony Boone with Lincoln High School. We also have a few students here from Lincoln as well who could be prospective students for our program. Christopher Dickman, he's with UNT Dallas, and Dale Smith, who we've been working with, he's with Black Contemporary TV. We'd first like to start by taking you back to 2014 when we first discussed this program with you, because it's been a while. So in 2014, the communications plan that we talked about presented to Council an opportunity to enhance transparency, enhance communications, and community engagement. Some of you were not here at that time, so I want to make sure that we go back through these points in case you wanted to see what we had talked about then. We discussed a new community news site, which we have done. We have a stronger online presence today. We've improved our cable and online access to public meetings. As you've seen, we really struggled with having broadcasts on public meetings for years, but we now have provided the access on cable and online. Social media communications, public engagement, we've expanded our video production, and we have worked with partnering with our educational institutions. In 2015, we briefed Council on a new broadcast center. This is at Fair Park. We identified the location. It's a building that's shared with WRR, and we proposed the physical layout. Now, this will include a broadcast center and also a student wing. And the student wing is an opportunity for students to take advantage of that equipment. So we talked about some partnerships that we were looking into with DISD, the Dallas Community Colleges, universities across North Texas, and others. Over the past year, we have partnered successfully with DISD, the community colleges, UT Dallas, UNT, UNT Dallas, SMU, TCU, UTA, and Paul Quinn College. We've also listed some of our media partners because they have actually served as a resource for us as we were building this program, and I'll get to that in a little bit. The broadcast center update itself, there is no impact to general fund. And the reason for that is that we had identified PEG funding for this project. So that's $5 million that we would be pulling out of PEG, which is public education government. And that fund can only be used per state law for capital infrastructure for the cable channels. Now, we developed partnerships with Lincoln, Skyline, and we'll talk about that here in a moment. And we also completed the construction documents. We also went through historic preservation review, and we have completed the bidding process for this project. Fair Park today, the space, it shares the same building as WRR. So this is what it looks like right now. It's dated. It hasn't been used in several years. It is a city-owned building. And this is what we are trying to replace. So look at the design that we have in place. On the far left side, that big block that you see, that is where the studio would go. And the reason that space is so big is because it would allow us to have different types of sets, if you will. So you could do roundtable discussions there. You could have a town hall meeting there. You could have different types of use for that space with cable broadcasting. In the middle section, those are edit bays, and on the far right is what we keep referring to as the student wing. On the next slide, you'll see how we have kind of narrowed in on that a little bit more and explained that the student lab will have edit bays that the students will have access to and also workstations. So we have some pictures that we put in here, and that's really how we envision setting up the space. So the next slide will actually show you some of the pictures that we have. And those pictures, that's really how we see the space coming to life. Now, the Communications and Policy Institute, this is something that we were still developing. We've talked about this over the last couple of years, but we actually have a program that we can discuss with you today. So the Communications and Policy Institute is a program that we have put together as a way to teach students how to communicate policy. It is something that will help us, because our young leaders will come out of this program better understanding how city government works, but we also want to expose them to the different facets of the city. We want to expose them to the Dallas Regional Chamber. We want to expose them to COG and DART and see how these different functions work together to serve the city of Dallas. The reason that the media is a part of it is because the media helps balance this equation, because it's not just about what we do in the city, it's about the challenges that we run into with communicating social issues and policy issues in the city. So students will be exposed to that. We plan to have 3 studio sets for education and community programming. We have 4 cable channels at this time. One is dedicated to council, one is dedicated to boards and commissions, one is dedicated to education, and one is dedicated to community programming. That is a lot of programming to create, and we need the space and the help to create that programming. So the proposed programs. The university's proposed program begins in fall of 2017. So does the high school program. These are semester-long programs. The colleges will have a communication lecture, policy lecture, guest lecture, and then they have lab time where they actually work on communicating policy. So every week they're putting their knowledge to the test. At the end of the semester, they'll be responsible for creating an educational public service initiative where they discuss a social issue in the city of Dallas, and they actually will be responsible for holding a press conference with the media. And journalism students will have the opportunity to cover that social issue as journalists. High school program also begins in the fall of 17. On Wednesdays, it'll be a rotating program, which means they will be visiting different institutions. And at the end of the semester, they'll be responsible for putting together a town hall meeting on the social issue that the college students have decided to focus on for the end of semester program. So the program benefits. What does this do for us? Well, more public information on city policies, events, and activities, more year-long activation at Fair Park. It strengthens our ties with our educational community, career development for students. It shows them opportunities that they may not even have known about before. And then it uses PEG funds for greater public access programming and facility improvements. So this building that has been sitting there outdated for years will finally get a facelift and some really neat stuff inside of it. So the next picture I have, you know, some are from Lincoln High School. They've shared some photos with us because these two schools in particular, DISD, asked us to pilot with Lincoln and Skyline. We are going to pilot this program in the next school year with 60 students. 60 students, including 30 college students, and then 30 high school students. So DISD asked us to start with Lincoln and Skyline since they already have programs targeted toward communications. And I'm going to hand it off to Dr. Crowder first to talk about what he sees as the benefit of this for his students.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. I'd also like to recognize Ms. Young. She came to Skyline last spring to support some of our football players who are now in the NFL. And I think there were 3 who had played in the NFL in the last 5 or 6 years. Thank you. We don't just do football at Skyline. We also have a really strong communications. We have Skynet, which is broadcast, and we have online newspaper, which is called the Skyline Tribune. The students go through 4 years, and they're able to really develop skills. I believe that the Communications and Policy Institute would enable students to actually go and see kind of how the sausage is made, so to speak, and see what's going on behind the scenes. I believe that homelessness and the use of bathrooms or restrooms is important, and that students can see from a policy perspective how media actually helps to bring up issues such as the use of deadly force. I believe that high school students are old enough to understand and comprehend the connections between policy and how it's presented in the news. And also, for example, the bus stops. I think that that's an important issue. When students see it on the news, it's not the same as they might understand it coming from a policy perspective. And what kind of laws do we create, or what kind of policies do we create within the city to support people? And it's about growing Dallas by enabling students to participate in the democratic process from the time that they're in high school, and hopefully make that transition into college. So I really hope that you will support the Communications and Policy Institute. It'll make a difference in the lives of DISD students, and it will also help to grow them into professionals who may decide to go into policy, or they may decide to go into professional communications.
Great job, Doc. Hi, my name is Louis White, Lincoln High School, and
I have to pay homage to the young man in the back to my left. That's Joseph Thomas. He was a student of mine. And so was Councilwoman Tiffany A. Young. So the proof is in the pudding. These young people were great as students, and they're great as adults. One of my favorite poets, Robert Frost, I'm always quoting him when he says in his piece, "The road not taken, two roads diverged in the yellow woods, and I, being weary, could not travel both, took the one least traveled by, and it has made all the difference." It's imperative that we understand that education is no longer contained within four walls. We have to come outside, and we have to teach, and we have to pair up, and we have to be with other professionals in order to grow. And that's exactly what communications policy is about. A young person came to me a couple of days ago. They had an opportunity to see the Magnificent Seven, the new Western that is out. But in class, he had an opportunity to view the original Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner, and then the Return of the Seven. So now he's doing a comparative contrast analysis between what is new and what was the original film. And we do this in the class. Currently, it's a dual credit class. Those students who enter in grade 9th and they stay until grade 12, they graduate with enough credits to come out and be a sophomore in college. So we are asking for your support for the communications policy because it works, and it has worked. Sometimes I have to catch myself and not lie about age, because when I see Joseph and when I see Tiffany and I say I'm 20 and she says she's 20, you know, but...
Thank you so much.
We have worked with DISD to make sure that through the Dallas Community Colleges, we will be able to offer this course as an accredited college course starting in the next school year. The reason we've come to you is because in December you will be seeing an agenda item for construction on this project. Again, this is a $5 to $7 million project. We intend to pull all of that money out of PUG. We do also intend to create some revenue streams using this program. Using the facility. We can only use the facility for cable use because we're using PEG funding for it. And so with that said, we can rent out the studio. We can rent out our student lab area for additional programming, and we intend to use that money for the maintenance and also for additional staffing at this facility. So we plan to, again, have the council consideration of the bid award in December of this year. And it's a tight deadline because to make all this work for the next school year, we would need to start construction in January, which is just a couple of months away. So now I'd like to open it up for questions.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I want to say I want to thank you for coming down. Dr. White, member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity, glad to see you. And I think this we're hearing a lot about collective impact. And I think this is an example, Mayor, of a collective impact model. We also hear a lot about the challenges we have in terms of workforce. I think this will give the students a competitive edge who will choose to go into this field. Oftentimes, we ask students about local government, and they really don't have a clue. And this also will allow those students to understand what we do, and then the value and importance of local government. And so I think that this is something that really is long overdue. It'll move us as far as the city through communications and public information into the 21st century with the facility that will be representative of the caliber that the city of Dallas represents. So I think it will be a benefit to the city. It'll be benefit most to those students. Also, as alumni of Skyline High School, I'm glad to know that Skyline is one of the schools that's being suggested and put forward. And so I don't see where this can be anything but a win-win situation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other comments, or Mr. Alonzo?
Thank you. I wanted to just say congratulations, thank you, and I think that this is great. Anytime we can involve our youth and get them included, I think it's also good to partner with the Youth Commission that Ms. Young brought back together. And I just wanted to make a minor comment in page 4. I think as we talk about the areas that you'll be highlighting as far as schools and universities, I think if you could just add or invite or include Univision, Telemundo, TV Azteca, TV America, and, of course, Korean News, I'm sure that they would be more than happy. I know that they are always asking us for information and how we can send that to our constituency. So look forward to being supportive of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McGue.
Thank you for the presentation. Two points and questions. First, as we look at slide 3 and we talk about the current shared potential partnerships, I've mentioned this to you, but have you had any discussion with Richardson Independent School District as of yet?
I have not, but happy to have those discussions.
Yeah, I make that request and hope as a city we continue to look at all the school districts that are impacted by the city of Dallas, and we have, 100,000 students in that category, so I want to make sure that takes place. And then what is the potential relationship with private studios that are elsewhere in the city?
We definitely can explore that. So some of the private studios that we've looked into, they're very costly. There's a very different use for that, and because ours is very specific to the type of use because of the funding that we're using. We've looked into them. We've looked at to see how they've designed theirs. But as far as partnering with them, we really have not explored that too much. And I don't know if, Chris, you want to expand on that at all.
Yeah. So just by way of mentioning, there's a studio that just opened that's doing a lot of educational work and things that actually started work out in Redbird area in southern Dallas and has just opened a studio called New Real International Studios, a guy named Coy Cormier. And I just would suggest that you also have a discussion with them just to see how different people with the same goals doing the same things might work together in something like this. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
Yes, excuse me. It is indeed an honor to have this conversation this morning. I still have some questions and wanting to get clarity, and I'll do that as it relates to DISD and what our actual role is. I don't need to get clarification on that. But I do want to take this opportunity to commend Mr. Louis White, Dr. Louis White, let me get that straight, for being a part of this project. And, you know, I have to do the roll call on him. This keeps happening to me as I've had the opportunity to be elected to Dallas City Council. But I need to take you all the way back to Austin, Texas, where Louis White, where became Dr. Louis White, and I went to school. We're from East Austin, Ron Kirk connection. We all here, and I don't think it was meant for us to be here. But I also want to know people to know that he is an outstanding educator, and he has a long history footprints all through. I'll say his voice through the airwaves. But his students have been very fortunate to have this talent, and I'm very proud that we have a connection. Also want to put on the record, and he I'm not going to talk too much because he knows my nickname and you don't tell it, but his father was one of the few, he was a pioneer in Austin. He was an Austin police officer at the time when there were very few African Americans in the city of Austin, and his dad also helped to open the door for other African Americans so that they could become police officers, because he went through quite a bit of prejudice and discrimination in this role, but he stood firm and he continued the fight so that Austin would be able to have a diverse team of blue boots on the ground. So I'm very proud of that, but I'm also, I know he would be proud of you today, but I want to just say thank you, Sana, thank you for that idea. But I do have some conversations that I will have with you. But I think the students will benefit with Mr. Dr. Lewin White, Mr. Crowder. We have the connection here, and also I'm sure you will also benefit with your students. But counsel, I just wanted to let you know that you're not dealing with a bootleg teacher here. You're not dealing with one of those that has been processed. He's real, genuine, and we will benefit through the City of Dallas if indeed this goes through. But it's on like neck bones if he's on top of his game and in front of the train. So I thought I'd throw that in here. Thank you, Mayor, for allowing me the time to take that privilege.
Thank you. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for the presentation. This is, I think, going to be exciting news. But I'm going to talk a little bit about the PEG funding is provided by the cable franchises. Is that correct? And so it's restricted.
Right.
The use is restricted for the public access. And I'm thrilled that we can, that this money that's kind of earmarked can be used for a project like this. But I want to talk about going forward. I just want to make sure how it would be or not impacting the general fund. So that, we don't accept grants, build something, and then becomes, difficult for us to manage long term.
Well, the good thing about the PEG fund is that it really does provide us this tremendous resource to do something like this. The one thing that there's a little bit of a caveat, we can use it for upgrades, but it's very clear about not day-to-day maintenance. And so that's why we have worked to include a revenue stream with this.
Okay.
And that will be essential for us to hire a couple of positions to help support this facility. So half of my staff will split, and my broadcasting staff will split, and half will office out of there. And we'd like to hire a couple of positions using our revenue stream to hire those positions to help support that and to deal with the day-to-day maintenance issues with that facility. So we do think that this is such a tremendous resource, and especially in this part of Dallas, that it will bring that revenue in. So we're confident that we can do this, because the biggest issue is going to be our day-to-day maintenance, and that will be covered through our revenue streams. But PEG will cover everything else on the biggest expenses right now.
So when we see this then come forward on the council agenda, then it'll all be backed by the PEG funding.
Right. You're going to see PEG funding on
that. Well, I look forward to you being able to kick it off, but I also, want to make sure that we're kind of staying in that government, the alley of the government, and that we're not that we don't use general fund money going forward to implement the programs. So I think they're going to be fabulous. I mean, being able to partner with our DISD and other public schools, and with the college, the colleges in our area. I think you have agreements with. Can you list those, the different colleges that you're working with?
Yes. So we are working on our MOU right now, but we have DISD, Dallas Community Colleges, UT Dallas, UNT, UNT Dallas, SMU, TCU, UTA, Paul Quinn.
All right. Well, that's great. So, and I'm looking forward to seeing this come to fruition, and I think it'll be a good use of some public space. And but just make sure that we have that funding source to provide to be able to continue the actual operations going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. Just want to join my colleagues in mentioning how great this kind of program is and how excited I am that we can provide some educational opportunities for students in Dallas. I do have to agree with my colleague, Councilmember Magoo. Half of my district is represented in Richland School District, and for those that don't know, there are actually more Dallas students in the Richardson School District than there are Richardson students in the Richardson School District. So it's a big part of our community, and want to make sure that we are reaching out to the Richardson School District and including them in these things. Mm-hmm. The other thing I did want to also mention was I very much appreciate the adaptive reuse of a important building in the city of Dallas that after the Science Place moved to the new Perot Museum has really not been able to be utilized. I'm really excited to see that there'll be activity going on there. Activity in buildings keeps buildings alive and up to date and moving along, and this is a great opportunity to further utilize one of the resources that the city owns. So thank you very much for that as well.
Thank you. Ms. Young.
Thank you. Let me first say thank you to both of the doctors, the teachers that we have here today that are educating young people in the area of RTV and communications, for all of the work that you do. certainly I've been the skyline for more than the football occasion because I have a junior there, so I'm there quite often. And then certainly Dr. White, who I won't tell all of the fun that we had at Lincoln High School and radio TV, but certainly it was a pleasure to be a part of that program and knowing that when I got to college, I was beyond prepared, so much so that I changed my major from communications to another major because I was that prepared. So I do know that these are two great programs that we have in the city of Dallas, and I think it's important to highlight. I appreciate my colleagues who are advocating on behalf of RSD, because that's what they were elected to do. But certainly we want to make sure one of the things that we often hear, especially as it relates to Fair Park as an institution, is that we are not inclusive of the community around Fair Park. And so I think it's very important that we are focused on the schools, particularly that are around Fair Park, and then also that already have these programs in place so that we kind of have a pipeline there. I guess to that end, one of my questions is how will the high school students interact with college students, if at all? Will they have interaction together, or are these programs separate?
For the first year, we're going to bring the students in at the very end to work together. So the reason we are keeping it at 60 with 30 college students and 30 high school students is we do want to create those mentorship opportunities with the college students. We haven't completely carved that out yet in the MOU, but especially for their end of semester program, we're going to have the college students create some kind of public service initiative, education opportunity, and the high school students will build on that. So the college students will build out the collateral, the information, and push all that out, hold the press conference, and the high school students will put together the town hall meeting. So we do plan to have them connect.
And then how were, maybe this is a question for Dr. Crowder and Dr. White, how were the 30 students selected? Is it like juniors and seniors, or will it be a mixture of between freshmen and seniors?
The plan is to take students who've already had at least 2 or 3 years of experience in foundations of communications and journalism. So we would be looking at the editors and assistant editors and people, students who are on broadcast already and already have experience. So they would be seniors. We would be identifying them now in their junior year to go forward with it next year.
And then how will the public, so I noticed that one of your critics is a part of the team that is helping to build this institute out, and I know one of the things that he often talks about is the public access is not being there, how we used to have the public shows. Will that be a part of this new institute? Will there be opportunity for the public? How does that look?
Well, the way that we'll be able to rent out the facility is if it's used for cable programming. We alone will have a very hard time creating programming for our community news channel, so we will need the public's help in creating that content. So by renting out that space, and then we'll also work on finding exceptions for certain organizations, the same way OCA has, and so we do plan to have community involvement with creating that programming because it's a community channel. So we'll need support on that.
And then I have a question about the news stations. It was page 4. So you have, I guess, the 4 major news stations. You have the Dallas Morning News. As our Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo stated, I too will reiterate, I'd like to see particularly some of our ethnic newspapers involved. You've got new media that's really big, especially with the young people that are coming up. You know, how will we involve like the bloggers and the other areas of media that are really popular right now, social media? But then explain again how these news stations will be involved. What will be their role?
Their involvement would be the same role someone like DART or COG would have with the program. So the faculty and staff that have helped us shape this program, they want the students to be exposed to news directors and news anchors and reporters and producers so that students can hear from them what their challenges are in communicating policy. And again, to balance the equation a little bit, because we don't want them to only hear from city officials. We want them to hear from the journalists, too, what it's like on that side.
So there'll be lectures, is their role?
Yes, they'll be guest speakers.
But they won't be using the facilities for their services.
I mean, if they want to rent it out and we can use it for public access, that's fine, but otherwise, no.
And then on the PEG funding, so I too share similar concerns. So going forward, you talk about having revenue from rentals and that kind of thing, and that's what will be used for maintenance of this facility.
Right.
So how will that be carved out? You know, we're in a situation right now at Fair Park where buildings haven't been maintained. Mm-hmm. How will that be carved out? What does that look like? What have you all estimated in terms of maintenance?
Do you want to discuss the maintenance on that at this time?
I mean, right now, maintenance on the building, we're not sure. Because, I mean, if council approves, we'll go through a full construction process. So everything in there will be brand new, all plumbing, electrical, AC units, everything will be new. So hopefully we'll have a warranty on that that'll get us through for a couple of years. And on equipment, it'll all be brand new. So as we build our funds off of the rental, we will have money in the account to do maintenance later.
Okay. And then what other cities perhaps have partnerships like this or institutes in place? Did you look at any other models?
We did. Actually, our partnering universities helped us with this and did a national search to see if there was a similar program, and this is the only program of its kind. So we would essentially be a national model for this.
Great. I will close by just saying I, too, would also like to see our youth commission involved in this work. If we can maybe get a briefing to them, and it's something that I think they can share in, and knowing that it's happening, we do have commissioners with friends and colleagues and constituents in these zones, and so I think it's important to have them involved in this process as well. And I'm just excited to see this partnership go forward, particularly in the Fair Park area, as we continue to have conversations about the need to create the year-long foot traffic at Fair Park, to create opportunities, and just as Councilman Thomas talked about, to create opportunities to really train young people in areas. I know when I got to Lincoln as a sophomore, my first job, Mr. White helped me get at K104 radio station. And so that was my very first job as a young person and really shaped my career, even though I didn't necessarily go into communications long term, but I did work in radio for 10 years. And so I think that's really important in terms of training our young people with some careers and possibilities. So thank you all for this vision.
Thank you, Ms. Young. Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to echo sentiment of a lot of my colleagues with this. This is a great opportunity, not only for high school students, but collegiate students as well. Dr. White and Dr. Crowder, no pressure. And being the guinea pigs and working out the kinks, I wish you much success. Very familiar with Skyline. My oldest son just graduated last year, and I have a freshman there this year too. So Lincoln has always been a staple when it comes to video communications in the city. So what you're doing is trend setting, and you're going to make a lot of other schools jealous because, you know, I've already had questions about, you know, Wilma Hutchins and Carter and Holsey, our middle schools that have programs like this. So we're looking for big things to happen from this and opportunities to partnership with the colleges and the high schools and middle schools too. What it does is gives students another opportunity, another option that may not have been presented to them before, something else to think about. Particularly in the minority areas where that we don't have a lot of anchors, a lot of newscast individuals, this gives them an opportunity to work in TV and radio and get that behind the scenes. Also, for our individuals in theater, gives them an opportunity to be able to work behind the scenes in lighting and editing. And one of the things I want to just ask about the social media part, which is now in terms of technology, how is that going to be introduced and into this program?
We have stressed to the teachers who have helped us build this program that this will be a multimedia program. So similar to how we are at the City of Dallas, everything we do for our cable broadcast is also shared on our social media channels through YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook.
So we fully intend to do that for the students as well, show them the ropes for Periscope, Facebook Live, which most students probably know better than us, to be fair. But that is very much a part of this program, since that's the current and the future of media.
Okay. On slide 13, we talked about the some revenue opportunities. I know that we want this to become pretty much self-sufficient in terms of financing itself so that we don't have to dip into the general fund for this. I think that was stated before. But also, could you talk to us a little bit about, we want to make sure that we don't forget our nonprofits and our community for being able to help us with content and be able to use the facility. Could you talk a little bit about that?
We have. We intend to loop in those groups after we have this program hammered out. So probably sometime next year, as this building is under construction, we'll be working with our nonprofits to see how we can welcome them into this. And another way that we can raise money is also through the exception of donations for the programming. And so especially with nonprofits on board, I think that that will really make it possible to help us get that money that we need to keep this self-sustaining and not put any pressure on the general fund.
And will there be any partnerships with WRR since we are basically sharing the same building and wall?
Absolutely. They've been very welcoming. We are basically considering it as a sibling, very friendly, home divided. But, yes, we have talked about the opportunity to simulcast content. They have a lot of content that they create for their radio shows that they want to start doing with video so that they can continue to do for their radio programming, and then we can share it on our cable broadcasting, and then we plan to do the same with our content. So we've talked about that, and we're really excited about that partnership.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got a couple questions here. First one would be on the budget. Going forward on the O&M, and how many staff people are going to be dedicated to this institute?
In the upcoming budget, we're going to ask for a coordinator for the facility. And out of the staff here at City Hall, we'll have two more that will move over there. So it will be three total over there.
Three people. Great. I'd like to see your budget that you've already prepared for the three positions as well as the revenue streams that will cover all three positions as well as your estimated O&M on the building so that we can see that this is revenue neutral. That'd be very welcome. Also, just an observation. I'd recommend calling it the Broadcast Center and Communications and Good Management Institute. At the City of Dallas, we have a division between management and policy. Council makes policy. Management does a good job managing. So just on that name would seem more accurate for this endeavor. Also, I'd like to know how much money is currently in the PEG fund and what is its projected rate of growth each year?
We have about $6 million in the fund right now, and it replenishes about, we add about $2 million from the franchise fees every year.
Well, great. One area AC to look at spending that money would be on any types of, because I know it's going to be used on capital expenditures. I assume that includes hardware servers, that kinds of things. Some type of hardware to assist us with open records requests. I still receive a number of emails about and inquiries into my office, Mr. Gonzalez, about the rate at which we're turning around open records requests. So if we could budget additional funds towards hardware and software that could better handle those requests, as well as possibly having some website that would catalog all the requests we receive, a server, and then put our responses when we get them, I think that would be a good use of the funds, since educating the public, which is my understanding what these PEG funds can be used for, the best education for the public is to respond to their requests for information.
Councilmember Griggs, on that, this is not for education only, it's for public access only. So unless what we spend our money on is used for our cable channels, we are not authorized to spend that money on capital infrastructure. That is not for our cable channels.
Well, then I would maybe our cable channels could flash up a list of all the requests and the information. We could get some expenditures in that direction, find some creative way. I know this money's been used pretty creatively before. That's an area where we really need some help.
And we have done a soft launch, not a hard launch. We have
just
done
a challenge for you guys.
We have
if
done
you want
soft...
to take the challenge is out there for you to take.
I accept
if not,
the
you
challenge.
Can, if not, you can walk away from it and work on the excuses.
I'd like you to grab the challenge.
Yeah. I know the excuses, they're already coming out all directions. I got excuses coming at me from two directions. So it'd be great if someone would come out, take this challenge.
It's actually haven't said a word yet.
I know. I've been waiting for you to say a word.
Well, the word is that we accept the challenge.
Wonderful.
But also to recognize that that challenge has already been out there, and we've already been doing a lot to provide the level of public information and openness and transparency that's never been seen before.
Well, that's great. It'd be great if let's get it across the finish line. If some of these funds that are going up $2 million a year could be used for it, it'd be very welcome. Thank you.
We have a new open record software that we have soft launched, and there is now a catalog online of open records requests. And again, we've done a soft launch of the new open records program, which is an actual open records program. For 7 years, we were using CRMS, which is what 311 uses. So with council support, I think last year or 2 years ago, we were able to pull that off. So we do have a more appropriate system, and we hope to expand on that and build on that and make that stronger in the future.
Well, great. Well, send me a link to this new soft website with all the soft launch, the beta launch of it. I'd like to take a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Sonic, great presentation. The concerns I have are the same concerns we had when we talked, you and I last year. I think Ms. Gates had asked a question that I'm really concerned about. I think this presentation is really long on here's how we're going to get it built, but not how we're going to maintain it. And there's nowhere in the presentation, and I don't sense that, and I'm not trying to be mission critical, but I don't sense you guys have any idea how much it costs to maintain this. Where is that in the document?
We are going to be working with our contractors to get that document, but with the cost that we have pulled up for how much it will cost to pull off the construction of this building and repairing everything inside of it, we do have a ballpark estimate so we can get that together and share that with you.
How much is that, roughly?
I don't even have a number on me, do you? No, we'll have to get that to you later.
Okay. How many square feet is the building, roughly?
Square footage is about 18,000.
Okay, so it's going to be a really expensive building to maintain. And I'm not saying we should do it. I'm not even saying we need to break even. I'm just saying we need to get close. So you're going to pull over two people from current staff to go over there, and you want a coordinator. Who is the person who's going to be responsible for selling this product, for raising revenues?
This guy right here.
Okay, so you're so is that what you do now?
I'm the broadcast manager over all the cable station.
Okay, so you cover all the sales.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you project? What do you project when this thing is fully launched that you can raise in revenues?
That's what we're looking at right now. We're putting those numbers together, but we can get you a number.
I don't want to be too critical because obviously this is great for the kids. When you come to a briefing and you say and you say this is a wrapped up product. And we want this money, and you don't have the backside of it, of how we're going to maintain it, that's not great. If this was any other project, and you came into this briefing and said, hey, give us, $5 million, it won't cost us any money. Well, how much will it cost us? Well, we don't know. It wouldn't have gone over well, So I would just really encourage you. I think we all want this thing to succeed, but what I'm really afraid is going to happen is in the law of good intentions, 3 or 4 years from now, this thing raises, $50,000 a year. The O&M on it's $1 million. And I think we just have to be very, very sensitive to that. And that's my big concern. Not that I don't want to do it. I think we should do it. But I think for your own headache, you need to get those numbers and projections out, very quickly. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton. Ms. Young.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I was going to ask I heard that there were some Lincoln students here. Are they in the audience? Where would they stand? I just want to recognize Lincoln Smith. Thank you all for joining us today in District 7 School. And are you guys excited about this? Looking forward to it? All right. Very good. I wanted to make sure that we recognize those students that were joining us. And then as I hear the conversation about the maintenance of this building, I would be very interested if we would apply this scrutiny to everything, especially that free streetcar that we have. Okay, that how are we going to maintain that? And so it's very interesting to me that when things come south, we want to start nickel and diming things.
Thank you. So this is going to be on our agenda when? December. So in that interim, you can get Mr. Griggs' questions and the budgets, and we'll just all see that, and we'll vote on it that way so we make sure we have it. I will say that this is exactly what Fair Park, this is the type of activity that we're talking about with Fair Park. We'll have kids in there. We'll have the community in there. We'll have professionals in there. And these are the sort of strategies that I think will ultimately make Fair Park come back alive. So thank you so much. With that, we'll move to the next item.
Thank you, Mayor. The next item has to do with the development of our bond program. We've already heard several presentations with regards to the various aspects of that bond program, including the amounts that we might be looking to finance, as well as some of the major categories of expenditure. This morning, we want to see about getting more information from you all as to what's your sense of priorities with regards to some of the additional amount of information that we have received from the citizens that have been briefed in various town hall meetings, if you will, on the topic, as well as hearing more from the staff and some of the committees related to various aspects of the bond program. So I'm going to hand it off to Jill and to start and then go from there.
Great. So just to reiterate, what we're going to do is give you all the results of the town hall meetings, both the meetings themselves and the online survey that was done that mirrored it. Then we're going to talk to you all briefly about kind of policy objectives, and we hope to hear back kind of what your vision and what you want to accomplish out of this bond program, and talk with us about guiding principles for how we're going to select projects for the bond program. And then we'll kind of look at a straw man of how the bond program might lay out. And then we've got a clicker exercise. So you all in the town hall meetings saw the clickers in action, and today we're going to have some clicker exercises for you all to help kind of get the conversation going across the council. So hopefully it'll be a fun presentation and get good input from you all as we really hone in on it, because this is the kind of the final push, and Rick will be also at the end talking to you about kind of the upcoming activities, because we're going to be scheduling meetings with you all over the course of the next couple weeks, and then the town hall meetings for January. So with that, Rick's going to give the presentation.
So we'll move on to slide 3. Just a little bit about milestones of where we've been. We've talked about technical criteria, financial capacity, needs inventory. And that little red square with a circle, that's where we're at now. We're going to talk to you about the results of the town halls and online surveys. And you can see what remains to be done. We're a little bit more than halfway through. So meetings, next slide, please. Meetings were held, town hall meetings were held from the 3rd to the 9th. We had online survey day more from the 3rd to the 20th. The results, 31 town hall meetings, 546 people attended, and we got a survey input of over 2,800 people, and we got some comment or project suggestion cards of 234 that were handed out at the town halls. Just a note, staff has invested over 1,200 hours so far on various components of this, preparing for this bond program. So let's go into the questions that were asked. Slide 5. Citizens were asked 14 survey questions. And what the next few slides will be, it would be a summary of the results of those questions of both at the town halls and the online. Now, it's a summary. You want more specific details, they're available for you in the appendix. So the results of the survey was the first ones were on street and transportation proposition. And as you can see, questions were, should we just maintain the streets, get them a little bit better? And last of all, hey, what about we just split them, right, between maintaining the streets and putting in all the other amenities that are, I wouldn't call them amenities, but requirements and needs, which would include the alleys, sidewalks, traffic signals, fixing bridges, and so on. And, of course, preponderance was on C, split it even. Next survey question was for the people attending and taking the survey, was where should we concentrate? Residential streets, thoroughfares, and they were mostly evenly split between those. We move on to the next survey question. Participants were asked to rank the top three for flood and protection and drainage proposition. And the very top was to protect homes, businesses from flooding and tide were control of erosion that threatens public property and build and repair bridges and culverts. Next survey was on parks, and they were asked to prioritize the top three priorities for parks and recreation. The very top was to concentrate on neighborhood parks, playgrounds, pavilions, followed by citywide and regional parks and recreational centers. We also threw in a survey question on Fair Park. Where would you prioritize that? And that came in pretty much in the medium side, as you can see in the screen. Library facilities, same thing, where would you prioritize? And that was very much in the high side. Prioritizing culture facilities fell a little bit more further in the lower side. Economic development and housing projects, those were prioritized as being more on the high side. And court facilities was prioritized in the lower side. As we move on to public safety, police facilities, that ranked pretty high, high side. Most of the participating citizens believe that was a very high priority. The same thing with fire facilities. So as far as where do you think we should focus in 2017 capital bond program? And the answer was, for city facilities, the answer was very much on fixing existing facilities followed by reconstruction and replacement of facilities. We also threw in another question, was where did we get most of the questions from? Or rather, where did you find out more of this town halls and the online survey? 33% was on email, followed high ranking was council member social media. Citizen suggestions, as I mentioned before, we handed out these cards at the end of the town hall meetings. And in addition to that, we had some Facebook, Twitter, call-ins, information, and you see the breakdown of the interest there on slide 19. Slide 20 is pretty interesting. So what we did was one column, you've got all the propositions, and then we put down what the citizens ranked as being the highest priorities in this proposition in order. But importantly, in the third column, you'll find how the council, when they played that monopoly exercise and how they ended up ranking, if you see them side by side, by far the, and again, they're a little bit different. One is ranking by priority. The other one was ranked by the money actually allotted to each of these propositions. But you see them side by side. Streets and parks pretty much are consistent as the highest ranked, and then followed after that, they were kind of mixed. Slide 21 is how what that breakdown was for the council's monopoly money exercise. And we move on to slide 22. So we need to select a vision. We need to know where we want to put the emphasis for this bond program. And to kind of help us a little bit in that process, we went back, we found what 2006 bond program and 2012 bond program themes were. In 06, a strategic investment protecting our city, creating our future. And in 2012, bond program, a strategic investment in economic health and future of Dallas. So as we start to think about that theme, we need to also be reminded of the previous funding that was allotted in previous bond programs and what those current needs are. So in slide 23, we inserted this slide that gives you the funding, those that received funding in 2006, the amount, 2012, and as you can see, some of those propositions received no money. And then next to that, those last three columns is the combination of the current needs broken down by new, rehab, and major maintenance. All those, again, if you add them all together, will exceed $10 billion. So staff has come up with some suggested, or rather possible themes. And so if you move into those, one of them was maybe think about back to basics. And that would include maintaining and improving street conditions, say repairing critical buildings. Another way to maybe set the theme or that vision may be to enhance quality of life, local streets, invest in local streets, neighborhood parks, libraries, cultural facilities. At times we've heard the council mention just concentrate on roads. Well, that would be fix our roads. And streets only bond program is what we could select the theme for. Focus on public safety, which would be police facilities, pump stations, traffic signals, and invest in Big D then also incorporates more economic development and housing, citywide park projects, improvement of our arterials. Picture Dallas would be the council's vision of Dallas. So we move on to the next slide. This is now guiding principles for selecting projects. So we had a theme. It's more higher level. Now we come to a project-specific, a method to move forward. Things to keep in mind would be, you know, do we want to maintain the street condition versus other mobility, such as in our alleys, sidewalks, and so on? What about our buildings? Do we want to replace them, replace them? Or do we also want to include in there some critical new facilities as well as the repairs? And three, do we want to concentrate maybe on taking advantage of leveraging dollars from private and public entity sources? So let's move on to slide 26. They may be in a different order from what you're looking at, but it's important to start here. The next slide will be where we start using those clickers. But if you look at this slide, we looked at how we would fund streets, and we came up with three scenarios. One was that second column was, what if we just took the money that we get and we divided it by 15, 14 council members and a mayor. So each in every $100 million spent, each council district would receive $6.7 million. So then we said, okay, let's look at another scenario. What if we divided it by the percent of lane miles per district per every $100 million? And you can see the breakdown there. And then the third of the last column is we divided it by unsatisfactory condition. What I mean by that is we took all the streets in the whole Dallas, unsatisfactory condition, and we proportioned them per or what they were for each council district and put a percent for those. So you can see though all those are different. So we move on to slide 27. Then we'll come up with your first clicker question. And should the distribution of the streets proposition funds be based on split even amongst the council districts, based on lane miles per council district, or based on street condition per council district? We've got some helpers behind you, and so what you would do is you would punch A or B or C, and that's all you would have to do, and we're going to look at the results in just a second.
We don't get to deliberate on this?
Why isn't the option of the most used streets vis-a-vis the street condition not an option?
We're going to kind of go into that in the next slide or the next survey, and that will be on
But that's what I want to vote on.
Okay.
That's the next one.
That's the next clicker exercise.
So don't vote on this one?
No, vote on this one.
But my option's not here on this one. Stop advocating. Do you understand? I mean, there's a fourth option here, okay, which is the ones that are most traveled and need the most. Those should be prioritized.
And those occur in all of the districts?
Well, they don't occur equally in all the districts.
Right.
That's my opinion, and that's why I said, why isn't there an option for that?
Well,
it's not included on this slide, but on the next slide, it will be an option.
Okay. Thank you. Did you want to speak on this, Ms. Gates?
Well, I put my light on to speak about the whole thing. I didn't know we were going to get to these first. But like you brought up a good point, though. But do we even determine what streets have the most use? Do we have those numbers? I don't know if the city has those
numbers. Apparently they're saying they're going to talk about
okay.
Well, okay. So
what we have is we have classifications, so we have it by thoroughfare. We do not have good traffic data. So that was cut out of the budget a long time ago, and we have it kind of sporadic, and it's not consistent across all.
So if you had a street like a Douglas that gets it gets a pretty good traffic, but it's not a thoroughfare, then we're not going to be able to compare like a Douglas to a Thackeray or a Douglas to a Willow.
Well,
if they're
Douglas
not
would show up as a community collector, and so that's included in the thoroughfare category.
But you don't know what community collectors have the most trafficked area.
Correct.
That's
so it would have to be based on classification of the street.
Another suggestion to just throw out there is whether or not what they keep referring to is the next slide. It's 28, and where you have there, that kind of speaks to volume.
To volume.
Is whether or not you're going to have the allocation based on local versus thoroughfares or both. Now, in essence, that's a very general category with regards to how you would look at volume, as was just explained. You don't have
I'm sorry, I've just got to ask this, okay? How do we spend hundreds of millions of dollars and we don't know which roads are most traveled on?
Well, we do know for the thoroughfare. We have information on, first of all, looking at this, could you get to the slide 28? You've got those base. We know the streets that have the big traffic and those that are local. We've got that information. Obviously, when you start looking at traffic counts, those are on thoroughfares where we have information on many of them, if not all of them.
Right,
so,
but it's not consistent. It's not all from the same year, so it's not.
Thank you. All right, I'll shut up. Go ahead.
Okay. Can we still go? Can we still reverse?
Yes, please.
On the. Okay. So at this point, if you made your selection, if there's anybody that has not made a selection, then we're ready to go. Everybody's voted?
Okay. No, everybody has to re-vote because we changed slides.
So please re-vote.
He would vote that way. He would. I know he would.
Yeah, we've already done the caucus.
We're the free words.
Y'all vote for Ricky? You can't vote for Ricky.
Yes, we can. No,
I want you to vote. No, I want you to vote for Ricky. As long as you vote for Ricky.
All right. Has everyone voted? You all can see on the computer if everyone's voted.
We have 14.
Well, there's only 13.
There's only 13. I voted for Ricky.
Okay. So let's look at the results.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but the Ricky vote is the same.
So that didn't help.
I voted for Ricky. So it's
a Republican to do the voter fraud.
Because he would have voted that way, because his street is a third.
Can we get a recount?
I need to file an ethics complaint.
So we have more surveys to take, but may I ask that you don't vote as proxies?
All right, guys, let me get control. All right, let's go, Rick. Next slide.
So the next slide, this is, I hope, addresses a little bit closer the questions associated with high vehicular traffic per street. In this case, we've got local streets, we've got 8,000 lane miles, and their condition is 66%. Thoroughfares, we've got 3,800, and their condition is at 76%. So the next question.
Wait, before you, just a definition. So a thoroughfare, you get to be a thoroughfare if what?
If you are a collector, so basically a four-lane or a six-lane street.
Thank you.
And if you all will notice the difference in condition, because the last few bond programs we have concentrated on the thoroughfares. And so we're seeing the local streets starting to decline more. So that's why we're posing this as a – all right.
Okay. So we move on to the actual question, and I'll give you – a few seconds to vote. Ready? Okay. So the results are to mostly preponderance is voting for both. So we'll move on to the next slide. Should the street proposition focus on A, maintaining street conditions? That would take about $400 million for that bond program. B, maintaining and improving the street conditions. That would take a little bit more. And C, is it split evenly between maintaining the street condition and other projects such as alleys, sidewalks, bike facilities, and traffic signals?
Mr. Mayor, do we have
Ms. Clayton has a question, right?
On C, will you repeat that again? Says, what would the other projects be again?
So the first one is, let's just maintain a street.
No, I understand the first two. Just explain
C. So the C is, let's just maintain the street at 73% overall. you know, knowing some are going down, some are coming up as we fix them. We'll split between that and then also maybe adding some alleys, work on some sidewalks, traffic signals, bridge repair, and those types.
Yeah, what's the amount?
Well, there's really not so much of an amount here because you know, if you wanted to maintain your street conditions, well, that's 400, and so if it was split evenly, that would become 800, and your whole bond program would be here. So think of C as you are not interested so much in preserving the condition of the street, but adding the other elements like alleys, sidewalks, bicycle facilities, bridge repair, traffic signals. So, you know, we're really asking the question, how important is it to you to really maintain the street conditions, because that's $400 million. And if you want B, that means you're going to have to invest over $500 million in the bond program. And C would be, if you want to add those other things, either we're going to have to either go higher than $500 million or higher than $400 million, or we would not maintain street condition and it would decline, but we would do other things as well.
Can I, okay.
Mayor?
But
she has one, too.
I had a question.
What? Mr. Arnold?
Yes, sir. The question would be on C. My constituents are telling me that they want streets and alleys.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be
and so,
C.
That would be but, C. But let me clarify. I want to know how we can couch this so that we're not adding the amenities of bicycle racks. I have people who cannot walk through the alley, period, because it's overgrown. You have potholes and what have you, and I just want to put that for the record. How can we stay within the realm of alleys and streets and not all these other amenities?
Well, what we would end up doing is working with each council member individually to really talk about the needs of your constituents in your district. So some districts might have more bicycles, some might have more sidewalks, others might have more alleys. Others might focus on, you know, the major
thoroughfares. I just need to get understanding. Thank you, Mayor. My constituents need to understand that because alleys and streets are where we are. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Did you have a question too, Ms. Gates?
Yeah, I do because, I mean, I agree. We have a lot of alley needs and these other needs related to the streets. But how do we know how that's going to affect? Because you're saying you've given us that we maintain a condition, we improve a condition, and then what's the split going to do? Are we going to deteriorate if we split it too much? That's what we don't have.
It would boil down to how much we're going to have to ultimately allocate to the street proposition as to how you would answer C and its dollar
amount. So if we do anything less than 400 on actual streets, then we're going to our streets are going to continue to degrade.
Correct.
Okay.
Let me suggest this. If there is, let's ask this question. If there is the bulk of you, the majority, they're looking to have both streets and other types of improvements, whatever they might be, then we can take just, if you would, a show of hands as to whether or not there's support to go with that C more than 500, or is it going to stay less than 400? You know, to pick between the two. Because as Jill was explaining, if you're going to have a split on streets and on these other things, and you're going to keep it, say, at $400 million, then you're saying you're not going to be maintaining the street conditions by definition. So I think we may need to refine that just a little bit. But if we can just answer this, if, as an example, the vote is just maintain the streets, then we're done. If the majority is okay with A, then we don't really need to refine that much more. So if you would go ahead.
One person hasn't voted.
Is that a discussion? I mean,
yeah.
I think it's just, you know what, I think let's. We're not advocating.
Well, everybody seems to be taking a turn.
No, in asking questions, I'm sorry. Okay, please do whatever you want.
Thank you.
Ms.
So, is there an option? Is there an option here to do less than $400 million on streets?
There could be. If if we could get through these things, okay. Then we've got a slide dealing with laying out how the bond programs might okay. look, and that's when we want to get your reaction. These questions are mirroring the questions that we ask the citizens. And
so then my second question is maintaining street conditions, that's dealing with existing consumption, correct, as opposed to investing in new streets?
Correct.
Okay, so it's just like using the credit card to buy candy because you're just going to eat it anyhow. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Grayson.
Okay, so my question is, if we were to choose C, that allows a council member with the money in their district to put it into an alley or into a bike rack, right?
Correct.
Or it would allow council members who don't want to have those things paid for to put it all in streets, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. One person hasn't voted. All right, well, we got it. Okay, next question.
So we now move into the parks proposition. Rank your top three priorities in order, and that means in order. So, you know, it could be C, E, F, or A, B, C, or B, C, A, whatever. But rank them in order. So in this case, what you're doing is you put in each letter. Don't press enter. Just put each letter. Once you got your three, then you put your okay, which is. So first, put in your three letters based on the ranking that you believe you want to follow. And once you've got them all three put in, at the clicker to the top right, there's a little
arrow button.
Press that button.
Yeah. Yes. No, Richard, go. There you go.
Okay, so there's your results. That seems like the preponderance is on neighborhoods and community parks, followed by linear trails and so on down. So we'll move on to the next slide, Fair Park Proposition. Fair Park has $75 million in Priority 1 needs. So how should Fair Park be addressed in the 2017 bond program? Fund the $75 million in a separate proposition. Fund $75 million in the Parks Proposition. Just fund the smaller amount. Or wait until a decision has been made about Fair Park. So in this case, you just pick one, and there's no need to put the enter. So it's a little bit close between fund the $75 million and wait until a decision has been made. A little bit heavier on wait. Okay, we'll move on to slide 33. So as we look into a possible propositions and the money allocated, we've got the propositions in the left column. During the monopoly exercise, this is what the amount of money that was allocated per proposition. When we first started working with the $800 million on this other column was the needs, the large street and critical building needs that we had identified equaling $800 million. And in the last column, departmental, this is where the departments have told us what their needs are, our high priority request. And if you note at the bottom, that equals $1.3 billion. So with that in mind, we'll then move into a straw poll. So council direction is needed on to confirm the size of the bomb program, set possible propositions, and their approximate size, and then also to discuss the overall theme and guidelines for the bomb program. Okay. So next steps, we'll be working with each of the individual council members. Starting from either today or tomorrow, we'll set up an appointment, and we'll meet with you. We'll talk about specific projects. We'll have a list of all the needs in your district, and then on through, hopefully, we'll wrap up things up before Thanksgiving or at least the week after, and we'll start preparing a briefing where we present the manager's recommendations. We'll have a second round of town halls to discuss those recommendations, and we'll be starting to schedule those with you probably within the next 2 or 3 days. And then we'll again call for an election and on through the May 6th proposal of having that bond election.
And with that, we'll turn it over to you all.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I simply want to take this opportunity to thank all of those individuals who went out with the bond presentations. I will just speak for District 4. I received great feedback from Ms. Jill Jordan and her delivery to the constituents. So I did want to put that on record. You did a phenomenal job. I'm going to repeat that, a phenomenal job. Did y'all get that? Okay. So we appreciate that. But the whole team, we appreciate it. Mr. Gonzalez, you had a fantastic team to go out. And thank you so much for educating our constituents.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. I wanted to say I really think my constituents, for the most part, enjoyed the clicker exercise. I think it was more participatory. I think you ought to continue to do things like that. But I did want to ask about likely first council award for the 2017 resurfacing contract. That's just a few weeks after the election. Is that going to be done with bond program monies from this election?
Yes.
We've never done it that quickly. We usually wait until November.
No, we never have. But when we were outlining the Rick's department's budget for this coming year, we highlighted that we needed 2017 bond funds this summer to maintain the street condition. So we will be working and identifying those streets, and that will happen with you all. We'll have to actually bid part of that out, thinking that the election will pass. If the election doesn't pass, we'll have to cancel that portion of the bid. So,
but would that be like the first tranche of bonds is going to go all to streets?
It would just be the first. I think it's $29 million for this year, and so it's the annual resurfacing contract. So every spring you all have been doing a resurfacing contract, it would be like that.
But it would be using the bond dollars?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay,
so we would not do it. If the bond program does not pass, then it does not get
done.
Don't
say that. No. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. Kind of just some general overview. I mean, I thank you all for the putting together all the town hall meetings. I know that's a lot of work. It's a little disappointing, though, when you look at the total. I mean, 1,200 hours, and how many citizens came out? Like 500, was that?
A little over 500 citizens, and then we had the online citizens, and, 2,800. So.
Yeah. Did we have any, with the online, did we have any, way to look at if we had duplications of people taking the survey over and over again?
No, we did not do that.
Yeah. Well, I've just I mean, that gives me some reservations because, I mean, there are some strong advocates for different parts of this, of these bond proposals that I think would take, that they took the time to come to the meetings, they take the time to email us, and they probably would take the time to take online surveys multiple times. And so it's just hard to gauge. We put a ton of hours and then to gauge if this information, how relevant this information is from the public's view. So I think I'm feeling it because I'm out. You know, I have citizens that talk to me at the grocery store and at church and on the street, and I know they want streets repaired. But, you know, I've also heard, and it's in one of the slides, that the seniors, that would love a senior center, but I don't think there's any type of proposal for that, or they were even, it was really even addressed in the survey. So I think there's still things that we're leaving out, and for whatever reason, there's things that are getting pushed out. And so I've got some concerns about that. And this is really important actions that we're taking. This is probably going to, you know, it's going to be how we address the needs of our city and how we're going to move forward with maybe some exciting projects. And I still have some reservations about the way we're going out at it. And with that, I would also add that we're not, the big elephant in the room is our police, fire, and pension, and how we're going to be able to address that and how that's going to affect this bond program. And we're going to get all the citizens excited about things, and we haven't even had those discussions yet. And I think that's going to be something that we're going to have to talk about. I'm hoping it doesn't impact this bond election and addressing the needs inventory because we've got to address it. But the reality is we only have so much debt capacity, and we're going to have to just have that difficult discussion. And I had a question then, lastly, you know, and I think my frustration really comes out of these empty promises of the past. You know, we're going to have to look at things differently, and I hope when we get through this, we'll look at the lands that we bought for libraries that we might not be able to put libraries on in two bond elections after we bought the land, and we'll be able to figure out how we're going to get some of these things done, address these maintenance issues in our general fund, and not just put them off for these big bond programs that we, you know, I've had city staff go out there relating to flooded issues and tell them, oh, we'll take care of this in the next bond package. And that's what we've been saying for 6, 7, 8 years. And I have to go stand up there and tell the citizens, you know what, it's not gonna be able to happen in this bond package. And that's not fun. And you're not going to be able to get libraries. And I think all of us, 15, have to stand up and start having those frank conversations with our citizens. I don't think we've been honest. And I don't think the politicians in the past have always been honest. And there's this real confusion on what's a needs inventory and what's really been put on a bond package. I don't know how many times I have to explain that over and over and over. And I just, you know, I know I'm venting a lot of frustration, but we've got to be really transparent and honest, and we got to listen to what they're telling us we want to do, what our citizens are asking us for. And I'm very confident it's streets. And beyond that, I really am having a lot of mixed messages sent my way. So, and then lastly, are we going to have a citizens bond oversight committee like we've had in the past with this election?
Yes. So, you know, we cannot advocate and sell a bond program, and so our tradition has always been that the mayor at the time appoints three people to oversee the bond campaign. So assuming that happens, that would happen around January, February, identify those people, and they are anointed to carry on the campaign.
So all these what we put out there will...
They just take whatever it is that you give. So they will sell the bond program that you all pass and call in February.
Well, I mean, thank you for the continuing presentations. I'm trying to push this information out as best I can to my community and to the city at large. But I've got a lot of apprehension and concern that we're still not addressing everything. We're not doing it in the most transparent manner, and that that we're still not talking about the elephant in the room. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also want to commend you for your hard work and getting out into the neighborhoods and getting this information out. One of the most beneficial things, I think, was the use of the clickers. A lot of those, my constituents that came out to the town hall meetings appreciated the instant feedback. I've had opportunity last night to look over specifically some of the things in my district and kind of compared it to the city as a whole. And so I mentioned this, I think, Wednesday before last. You know, sometimes you have to look at from two different lenses. You have to look at things from your district, but also citywide, and try and find a balance. And I think that's why we're here, because we're up to that challenge. But I want to commend you for that and look forward to the next step in the process. And you talked about the Oversight Committee. I wasn't familiar with that, so can you kind of explain how that works, what they do, and then what our role, or what we're limited to be able to do as well?
So as city officials, we can't go to the voters and say, you know, vote for this. And you can on a private basis, but not as a part of your official role. So we have a bond committee that runs the election, kind of like what you guys, when you run for election. So it's the same kind of thing, only it's a committee. And they will typically hire a consultant. They'll raise money. They'll put out yard signs. They'll have a website. They'll have the normal campaign to sell it.
So they run the campaign for the bond.
So they run the campaign.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jill, so I'm a little confused, and just kind of take me through next steps. So, you know, we just did this exercise, and you know, like over on this side, you know, Ms. Gates, myself, the voting goes to Ricky. You know, we all wanted, you know, more money towards streets. And then, you know, you had half the council that said, well, we have great streets, we want, or better streets, we want them even better. So how, when we go and do the meetings, I know Lady Bird Grayson will say, I want more money for alleyways, and I want more money for whatever my district. How do we go about that? Because we still don't, one, how do we know, kind of, here's best case, worst case, and then when do we get to the point where we actually know best case, worst case for our districts, if that makes sense?
Well, our hope is today that the council can set some overall objectives. So, you know, it might be, I'll just pick a random proposition, the fire department. You all decide, you know, we really want a big push on fire. You know, they wanted $82 million. It was in their public safety briefing. So, you know, $82 million off of $800 is a big chunk. And so we would kind of, if you all wanted to do that, then we would take the $82 off the $800, and then we're going to start looking at the other propositions. We're going to look for kind of needs. And then at some point we'll get down to, well, the council said they wanted streets, so we'll be looking somewhere in the $400 to $500 million range. And it becomes like making a sausage at this point, in which it's not a clear path. The steps on that path, though, is that we will meet with each of you individually, show you our recommendations for which streets, which neighborhood parks, which erosion control, which flooding, and you're going to look down that list and say, you know, that priority isn't quite what I had in mind. It's not what I'm hearing. Or we had one occasion in one district where all of the high needs were in one little tiny neighborhood, and the whole bond program would have just begun to address that one neighborhood. And so we intentionally, you know, skipped some of the high needs and picked other things in other neighborhoods. So we will work with you all to balance that out. And if you all don't kind of give more direction about what size propositions and which propositions, then the city manager is going to work with the department heads, and we will craft something and then show it to you in January.
So with us doing the straw votes today, are you going to take it and say, okay, parks, you know, name whatever example, and you say, okay, well, council said 55% of them wanted to have XYZ occur. So when you come to our office, are you going to say, okay, based on the straw votes, here's kind of what you said, or?
Well, so if you'll turn to slide 33, please. So if you look at that middle column, this is kind of listening to you all and kind of hearing your needs as to kind of where we are. There seems to be a focus on streets. The 500 is there because we anticipated that your vote would go like it did, and wanting to do alleys and bicycle facilities and that kind of thing. So that gives you about $400 million to handle street condition and $100 million to do other things. We'll probably end up a little bit lower than that on the maintained street side, but the $500 million gives us room to make a stab at maintaining street condition and do other things. Economic development, that was a high priority for citizens, and it's been a high priority of council previously, and that 45 was divided, $30 million for housing, which could address the homeless facilities, and 15 for economic development, and that was based upon the amount of kind of projects that have been walking in the door on an annual basis and would get them through the next four or five years. I'm going to skip parks. I'm going to drop down to cultural. This is there because we've kind of heard you all say that you're not particularly interested in new facilities. And so what cultural really needs at that point, if it's not new, is major maintenance. And so we lumped it in with city facilities at $40 million. So that's just a kind of a round number to try to account for things, but we don't have a specific list for those. Public safety, $30 million for police. That's basically the $20 million in security upgrades, which council has looked at previously. And it, at least from my hearing of things, you all are interested in the hardening of the police facilities. And then that gives you about $10 million that could go for their reality-based training facility. On the fire side, $30 million, that would give you about two fire stations. Maybe we could get the one new one that they would like and one replacement, or we could do two replacements. And it would also do that $10 million, that burn building, and the upgrades that they want for their Dolphin Road facility. Fair Park, just looking through the critical needs, there really are some roofs, life safety, some really critical things that we need to handle because it will result in deterioration of buildings. So regardless of how we handle Fair Park, there's some things that we really must do there. Looking at the courts facilities, we can limp by. Libraries, the $20 million will give you basically two libraries, so you could do the one new one and one replacement or two replacements. Flood protection, we've got the big Trinity Portland pump station. It's a $65 million project. It's a neighborhood that goes underwater on relatively low rainfall events, and providing flood protection was, you know, a high priority for the citizens, and it traditionally has been a high priority for council. You add those things up, and the amount of money left was $50 million for parks. $50 million for parks is not what they want by any stretch of the imagination. But it would give you $15 million for Carpenter Park to match the $15 million coming in there. It would give you potential money to match the COG money for the Trinity Spine Trail if you wanted, and would give every council district a little over $1 million for neighborhood parks, or you could divide the 50 up and do neighborhood parks because that was a high priority. So, you know, when you stretch it all out, the money goes very rapidly. And, you know, what we hope to hear from you all is a kind of a discussion along these lines of, you know, well, we say we want to do streets, but, you know, we need to do more parks. Or, you know, we truly aren't going to do anything new. Or, you know, whatever your comments are. But that column is the kind of the straw man. It's always hard to start with a blank piece of paper, and that's a way of starting. Or you could take the council monopoly exercise and use that as a starting value. And the interesting thing there was, if you'll notice, it does not total to $800 million. There were some people that wanted something smaller. So we kind of need direction, and if we don't get direction, then we're going to try our very best by talking to you individually and seeing how we think what the a majority of council would feel about the different propositions and put it together and then bring it to you.
Thank you. You still have the mic. That was she was answering your question. Is that fine? Okay. Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with Councilmember Gates about the Dallas Police and Fire Pension System. I think that's going to heavily influence the size of this bond program, and we need to quickly get to possibly a range of solutions on that and how much they'll cost the taxpayers, if anything. The sooner we can get to that, the better, because if not, we're taking some substantial risk with this bond program. Also believe we need to go heavy on the basics on this one. I think the council has turned in their priorities a number of times, leaning towards streets and parks that need money, and this money certainly is going to go very quickly. But the big issue, I'll go back to it, is still the Dallas Police and Fire Pension System, us getting a better understanding of that. And I know, Mayor, if we could have some, as the city works on developing a strategy, if we could get, I know part of that's got to be an executive session on that before a final vote on the size of this bond program, that would be very, very welcome. Thank you, Mayor.
If I may, so a couple of points. We have said all along to all the folks that we're working with that this bond program may not happen. We've known all along that we could get all the way to February and not do it, and that has happened before. We planned the 2002 bond program, and if you'll notice, there is no such thing. We got to the very end, and council decided not to do it, and it became the 2003 bond program. So don't worry about that. That doesn't hurt our feelings about doing this work and getting to that point. So you all need to do what you need to do in the greater good of the city.
And Mayor, I have one more
point.
And if we could from legal get a memo or some clarification on what the council member involvement in these in this bond election can be, just from
right.
some statements made from staff that conflict with my memory of the 2012 bond program, where that was heavily supported by the council members, the mayor, and from an independent group, a lot of literature was sent out with all of our pictures on it.
Right.
Districts.
It is as a group, but I don't think you could, staff couldn't, and we couldn't put it on our city website.
Yeah,
so
the difference is between staff and council. If we could just get a memo on that before we get in the middle of it, that'd be appreciated. And that goes to Larry back there. He's here. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kleiman hasn't spoken yet, so we'll let him speak.
Great. Thank you very much, Mayor. I'm glad this slide is still up because I think the council has given very clear direction on the size of the bond program. I think the exercise that y'all conducted where people distributed their money, I know that we had to push very hard on staff to even get y'all to consider going from 1.3 to 800, yet 1.3 is still up there. So in my view, y'all have the direction on the size of the program. The second thing I just can't help but continue to reiterate is, in my view, using bond money for consumables, for deferred maintenance, for fixing things that are broken, for doing things that we've just ignored for years is not appropriate use of bond money. That should be coming out of our general fund. I know that we have established a streets fund to help pay for additional infrastructure repairs on our streets, and I think that's very good. I do believe that bond money should be used as an investment in our city, and investing in new streets, you know, or new buildings, or new trails, or new parks, those are good uses, new libraries, new cultural facilities. Those are what you use to invest to grow the value of our city, and just deferring maintenance and then pushing it off. I mean, in this case, previous councils pushing it off, pushing maintenance off to us, you know, a little bit unfair to us, but in reality, we shouldn't be continuing that action, and we should be, you know, minimizing the amount of just consumerism that we're putting on to that we're borrowing money to feed. So everybody knows I've pushed hard for, you know, a pay-as-you-go program. I think there are ways that we can continue to do that, and would like to see more of that. But I am pleased that the council has been receptive to the fact that we don't need to max out our bonding capability of 1.2 or $1.3 billion. Mrs. Gates and Mr. Griggs' concerns about Dallas Police and Fire, yes, that is an issue, and that's going to go against our bonding capacity. And if the city does decide to put money towards that, then obviously we have to have the capacity to do that. And we will unfortunately have to wait for the legislature. Even if today we decided we wanted to put money in that, we can't. So one of the real challenges that we have coming up, and I'm sorry I diverged a little bit, but one of the real challenges we have coming up is making sure the legislature understands that this fix requires their assistance with regards to our ability to gain control over the system and our ability to put more money into the system if we so decide, which neither of which we can do at this point the way the system's set up structurally. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gates and then Ms. Grace.
Thanks for an opportunity for a second round. Two things that jumped out that I didn't mention the first time. I know there's a real confusion in my town hall meetings about the economic development and housing. At one of the meetings, staff said it was not addressing homelessness. And the second meeting, they said it was that could potentially be used for the homeless issue. And I kind of stepped out and said, yes, if we have some of this is geared towards affordable housing, it would play a part in that role. There was confusion. I think there was confusion with staff and there was confusion with the public. When they were giving their input, I kind of read it as with economic development in the sense of us giving out money to corporations wasn't what they were looking for, and that's how we've used economic development, but they wanted to see us be able to kind of address some of this affordable housing or the homeless. So with that, we moving forward to understand what you're asking for, I think, is important. And then the second, I'm gonna circle back to the streets again. And my frustration is the streets are something that we should just be taking care of on its own, as Mr. Kleinman mentioned. But we haven't, and we have to address it in the bond package. But this idea that we're not going to consider lane miles or the ones that are in the worst condition, we don't do that for anything else. We don't just give every fire station in my district the same amount of money that we give other fire stations. Or flood control, we don't say we're going to evenly distribute flood control. So why that we let streets just get become so district-centric when we don't even know that the entire city could be driving on Walnut Hill or on Royal Lane? I mean, it's not – they're owned by the city, and they're not really district only a district asset, and that they're so bad in Mr. Clayton, myself, and I'm going to advocate for Mr. Callahan too, and then to say, well, we're just going to spread it out, and it just doesn't make sense to me because we don't do that with parks to some degree, but when something's falling apart, if it's a library or if it's a building or if it's whatever it is, we don't just say, okay, we got to improve every library and we got to improve every fire station. We do the ones that need it. And so we need to be looking at our streets that way. And because they're going to continue to get worse and worse and worse. And we don't even know. I know it's, you only probably the residential streets, but all these thoroughfares are used by the entire city. And it really is reflective of as our city at large, when we have horrible, deplorable streets.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson hasn't spoken, so we'll let him.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to reiterate there was something that was stressed in my budget town hall meetings was a concern about the fire pension. Just stressing to the community that while we're going to shoot for the stars with this, but understand that that is a real issue that we will have to face next year and will have an effect on what type of bond or if we have a bond. I'm glad to hear that you said that. We may not have one, and that's what I want to stress to the community, but to make sure that in the event that we are, that we do respond to our needs, and I'll be curious when you come talk to me about just a comparison between what we as a council and our monopoly exercise compared to some of those programs that it would cut out, because I know that we have a high need when it comes to our rec centers, our fire department, and public safety. So I just wanted to look forward to those meetings, but continue to stress that the fire pension fund is a real reality and something that we need to be concerned with, making sure that we are resolving that issue and that it could have an effect on how large or if this fund will happen.
Thank you. Ms. Grace.
Thank you. Let's go back, please, to that page that Jill was referencing when she was describing how the different propositions might be funded. 33 or something?
33.
Yeah, that one. I just wanted to say that I know, Jill, you were just kind of giving an example of how you might be able to put together a program of how staff might address it if the council doesn't give you some clearer direction. But I just wanted to say that as far as I feel, the way you described it, excuse me, where you kind of said, okay, we're going to fund all these other propositions or needs, and then whatever's left, if anything is left, it'll go to parks. I disagree with that. I do not want to see parks be the remaining category that kind of gets funded to the degree that after everything else gets funded, they get what's left over. I disagree with that very strongly. And I also think when you look at what the monopoly exercise was, it doesn't reflect the monopoly exercise. I hope the council starts giving you some direction, although, you know, we've had numerous conversations now on the size of the bond program, and every time we settle on a size, then we come back and start discussing it all over again. So I think when, you know, you had a slide there that said, I think it's the next one or the next 34 or 35. Okay, confirm the bond program size. When are we ever going to finally do that? Set the propositions and their approximate size. When are we going to do that? If it's not today, when are we going to do that? Because in the meantime, if we don't do that, the staff's going to put together recommendations, correct?
Correct.
And I just wanted to say the way you described the way you might go at your recommendation for parks is not something I would be in favor of. So when are we going to give you some direction and have it be a final direction? I mean, like,
well, we had hoped to get that kind of direction today because
but you didn't give us clickers for that.
Well, but that's not
an
easy multiple choice question.
You could say 1.3, 800 million.
Well, the council's already weighed in on the 800.
I know we did, and yet we keep hearing new discussion over it.
Well, the new discussion has, I mean, even today there was a discussion as to whether or not the last exercise suggested that it would be even lower than 800. Now, I think our thought is that it was the 800.
We're planning on an 800 at this point, so.
Now we had the other column there just to show that there was some high priority items, and just full disclosure, mm-hmm. The 800 is what we think we're getting planning for, but we are showing you the monopoly exercise went at the, you know, right at 7. Just wanted to make sure there was any change of
so staff
positions.
Is planning on an $800
yes.
million dollar bond program.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to say that if you're planning on that, and that's kind of your thinking as far as how you might break it up, I don't agree with it.
So the question would be, what suggestions might you have? So, for example,
look, can I just talk about process, mm-hmm. okay? I think it's the obligation of every council person to sit down with the city manager or Jill and go through this and say, this is how I want it broken up. All right? And I think that's what we got to get done in the next, you know, month or so. And hopefully you're open for that, right?
Right. And
okay.
It would actually be the next couple of weeks.
If you think that process will result in a final figure for the bond program and a number of propositions and what the propositions will be, I'm fine with that. I just wasn't hearing any kind of this settled process as to how we finally get there.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Ms. Young hasn't spoken yet, so we'll let her go.
Let me just say thank you as well for the meetings. I wish that they had been attended a little better by District 7, but nonetheless, I have received quite a bit of feedback back from constituents about the projects they'd like to see. And I guess that's my first question. How will we know if you all have received comments from constituents in our districts about the bond projects? Will you share that feedback with us?
Yes, when we meet with you individually, all the council members, we'll have all the information as far as what we received from different citizens, constituents in your district, as well as our needs inventory. We'll bring everything with us, and then we'll compare that and share that with you.
Right. I have the needs inventory, but I guess I'm concerned about, because at some of the meetings it was said, like, we had cards for District 7, then there were cards for the bond program that people filled out. Will we get copies of those? I'm interested in these specific comments that are coming from constituents.
We will provide all that we have.
Okay. And then on the needs inventory list, and I've heard from a few citizens, and I've looked through it myself, some of the projects, have you all gone through these? Some of them, just as we've seen recently in briefings, may include, for instance, in my District 7 needs inventory may have some District 9 stuff that didn't get switched over with redistricting. Have these lists been vetted to ensure that they're actually District 7, District 9, District 10, and we don't have crossover from the last redistricting?
So we try to catch those. I'm sure we still have errors in it. So when you see those, please let us know and we'll get them switched.
Okay, and then I would just continue to call out to those that live in District 7 to make sure that you let our office know. We sent out the needs inventory list, that you would let us know. If you don't have a copy, we'll get you a copy, and we do have the link posted. But we do want to continue to hear from those in 7 about what they'd like to see happen with the bond. I did receive a question from a constituent that I just like to get on the record. I know I've discussed this, and it just concerns, there are concerns, as they said, it with us talking about spending money, and that there may be some in the city who don't want to spend money and have concerns with the recent Moody downgrades. And so can we, I guess, hear from our financial, is she in here, Ms. Reich?
I'm sorry, you wanted to do what? Speak in the mic.
Understand how, well, I'm speaking in the mic. I don't think it's up or something.
No, I hear it.
There are concerns about the downgrades from Moody, and how and there are constituents who are saying, well, maybe we shouldn't be spending money. So I just want someone to speak to that. I've asked the question and received a reply, particularly, yes. I know she's given me a response about how this may or may not affect the bond program.
Ms. Rice. Yeah,
all right, thank you. So, yes, it will affect our interest rate and what we will have to pay to borrow money. I am currently running those numbers to understand exactly what the downgrade last year cost us and this current downgrade has cost us. But it appears that to do a rule of thumb, for about every $100 million that we borrow, it would cost between $1 and $2 million more to do that.
Okay. And then this constituent is asking for, are we able to publish a balance sheet showing what revenue is versus what we owe in bond obligations for the public?
We have. Sure.
Can I get a copy of that, and I'll get it to the constituent? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jill, one of the things that I'd like to see, you know, going back to what I was originally asking, is when we're doing the clickers, it's real easy to say, okay, I like it A, B, or C, because it's anonymous, right? I'm a little concerned that the transparency of the process. So I know Mr. Kleinman wants trails, for example, and I want streets, Ms. Gates wants streets. I think it's important that we know that when we do these exercises, you know, 101, that if we agree that $800 million is where we're going to go in the bond program, that I have to rank it 1 through 12, or my allocations or some form of that, and also the subcategories of, for example, obviously Ms. Gates and I feel strongly that if our streets are 20 points worse than the average, and then we get the same amount as somebody who has 85% streets, that's not fair. Now, I understand we all, and I'm just as guilty, we all want for our district. Totally get that. But if it's one person wants one thing for this or that. I think we need to know publicly what each other wants, because that's where you come to a compromise. Because I might not be as invested in trails, for example, but I may be more invested in streets, and that's how you make the route to get to what you want. And I just would really encourage us to do that. I mean, because we all want what's right for the city. I mean, we're going to have a presentation, you know, next presentation, where I had $32 million taken out of my district to fund aquatics, and not one of them on the first round is in my district. And in this bond program, I'm still not going to get it. So $32 million went out, and not a penny came in. And I understand that, because there's areas of the town, of the city, that need aquatics more than my area needs, and that's fair. But it has to be fair both ways, and it can't be, well, my streets are at 85%, well, I want them to be at 90, and we rattle around, like, you know, at 68, 69%. That's just not fair. So I want to see this stuff publicly, because then when we're having votes, you know, it's all transparent. Everybody knows how everybody voted, and if you want to vote that, I want even money for my streets are at 80%, then when we have votes down the road, it's a lot easier to say, well, you know, we just know where everybody stands. So that's one thing I would personally, you know, like to ask, is that we know how this process is going through. And I think it also goes to, I think if I understood you correctly, Ms. Grayson, about the direction and how we're getting to where we're getting, so that it's clear, if that makes sense. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm sorry, I just don't agree with you sending staff back into the council chambers to just keep stirring this pot. I think we need to set a budget, and then we can figure out how we can meet the budget. And so I'm prepared today to vote on one of these three options that have been put forth, $1.3 billion, $800 million, or $600 million.
So to clarify, we were talking about how it was broken up. I thought
but
we were
don't
all,
know how much.
No, it's all $800 million. I think.
But we had a council exercise that said $694 million.
The city manager, did you step out of the room?
No, I've been
okay.
Here.
Right. City manager said he's working on an $800 million budget.
Right, but that's not what the council's directed him. The council's directed $694 million.
So you would suggest it's $694.
Okay.
Yeah. Fine.
The council just did when he did the monopoly exercise.
Okay, fine. All right. Let's do that. For this, show of hands. For a show
yes.
of hands.
Yes, Ms. Grayson, you did just say that.
All right. Excuse me for being a bad listener. Okay. All right. Is that what you want? A show of hands for $694. Show of hands for $694. Okay. Show of hands for $800 million. Okay. All right. We got that. All right. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. Okay, I just want to reiterate, as Mr. Clayton and Ms. Gates keep advocating for streets, I just want to say, if we go out, look at page 20. I think it's page 20. Okay. If we go out and we have town hall meetings and we ask the public, what is it that you want? And the public gives us their input. And then we ask the council, what is it that you want with monopoly money? And we give staff our input. Don't ignore that input. Don't say, okay, we're going to fund all these other things, and then what's left over goes into parks, when we've made it very clear by going out to the public and on our monopoly exercise that parks came in number two. So I just want to reiterate that if you're going to ask people what they think, then honor the results you get from that. And the results are up there very plainly to see. So I wanted to say that as part of my previous remarks, but I didn't, and so I'm saying it now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Ms. Arnold, you have...
Yes, sir. Ditto that as well. But could you help me just reflect? Did we have a conversation about perhaps holding off until we find out what happened with the fire pension? Okay. I wanted to make sure we had that on the record.
Thank you.
So, I just want to make sure we had that.
Thank you. Well, I'll close with my comments. Now everybody's spoken. Look, this is hard work. 15 people would break it down 15 different ways and the amounts. So this is what we're talking. I think are inching forward each time. I do believe that people have got to advocate with the city manager's office about what they believe, and ultimately it's the city manager's job to pull it together just like he does in a budget and that's when the game starts. Then we start to mend off of that and get 8 votes for this bond, and that's what ultimately will happen. I would talk about 2 things that haven't been talked about today. And first of all, one strategy. I'm a big believer in leverage, leveraging private money. And to me, there is a lot of private money. The private, those citizens have voted with their pocketbooks. And I would like to get those projects accomplished that people want to help fund. And they're out there. I know Mr. Kingston and I agree on downtown parks is a high priority. And we've got money for those things to kind of accomplish some of them. There are other projects like that. So please, as we're thinking about it, I'm going to be thinking about how do we not spend money that wants to be spent if we spend our fair share. It doubles the money, right? The second is I know our homeless report is not back yet, but we are going to continue to have problems with our homeless population and be frustrated with this unless we invest in permanent supportive housing. Okay? They will be advocating for $25 million. It's probably in that budget. I mean, we may have the money in housing all ready to do that, but I don't want to forget that, okay, because that is an answer to our issue, and if we are serious about it. And last but not least, I think Ms. Arnold's question is a good one. I'm really happy to see everybody getting serious about this police and fire issue, because it's a very, very, very difficult challenge. And I would propose once again, okay, not to do a bond election in May, that we would wait till the fall, next November. And by that time, we would have the answer. We could do this bond election the way it should be done without this hanging overhead. And I think we could be, hopefully, the appropriate aggressive amount in spending this. Now, I know I'm 14-1 on this, but now that I think we're talking more about it and it's coming more in realization, I think that's something we should consider. I don't think we should stop what we're doing, Ms. Jordan, okay, in the process, in your timetable, but I would really ask our council to give that, once again, bear with me and give it just a little more thought, okay? With that, I thought we could break for lunch. Ms. Grayson?
I know, just quickly. With response to your leveraged funds comment, I agree that we should take advantage of that, but what I want to see is the money is already there.
Right.
I don't want these folks who say, I promise you that I will get you the money within 5 or 7 years. I don't want another horse park deal where we're going to put money in something and we wind up funding the whole thing because people didn't come through.
Yep, me too. All right. Guys, we want to talk again. This is 12 o'clock.
No, this question is based on what you just said.
Ahead.
When will we have to make, if we looked at doing that in terms of having an election later than May, when will we have to make a hard and fast decision on that?
Well, we've got to make it in February, right, for May.
Okay.
So we'll have till then.
Okay.
Ms. Young, did you want
to? Just very quickly, in response to your leverage comment as well, I'd like to see us at some point look at the park dedication ordinance for the city. I know there are other neighboring cities that do it, and as Ms. Grayson has pointed out, with the smaller funding for park and rec, I think that's a great opportunity, whether it's residential or commercial development.
Good. Okay, we are not going to have an executive session, so I won't read my comments. Let's be back here at 1 o'clock, and we'll take up our final agenda item. Thank you very much. It is 1:07 p.m. The Dallas City Council briefing meeting will come back to order. We will take up item C, And it is the Aquatics Master Plan. Willis, it's good to see you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor. And good afternoon, City Council members. Our briefing this afternoon is to give you an update on implementing the Phase 1 of our Aquatics Master Plan. So I'll start on page 3, which is a little bit of background. You'll recall that we have previously briefed the Council Committee and the City Council in 2015. The Park Board approved the update to the Master Plan in October of that year. And then we had a professional services contract with Kimley Horn. We do have Mark Hatchell here, a principal with Kimley Horn. It's joined us at the table, and Louise Elam, Assistant Director for Planning, Design, and Construction. Page 4 is some background, again, on the Elgin B. Robertson land sale that was approved by referendum in May of 2013, that basically we were able to sell the land at Elgin B. Robertson for $31.8 million. That money was allocated towards implementing the Aquatics Master Plan. A little bit of background on our aquatic system. We have 17 community pools ranging in age from the oldest, probably 1949, the newest one, 1976. Many suburban communities are tearing out their community pools that are newer than our, that are older than our newest community pool. We also have Bachman indoor facility and Bahama Beach, our first family water park. Our community pools are basically functionally and physically obsolete. Our attendance for the entire pool system last year was 209,000. Good attendance, strong increase in the prior year and in this year. The breakdown was basically about 120,000 for community pools, 59,000 for Bahama Beach, which is very successful and carries the financial burden, the cost recovery burden for the entire aquatic system, and about 30,000 at Bachman Indoor Pool. So on this page, you can see the phase one total for implementing the Aquatic Master Plan is 32.5. That's broken down into the 31.8 from the land sale at Elgin B. Robertson. We also had some master plan implementation money in the 2006 bond program for Crawford Park, and we've the Park Board has allocated 600,000 of that implementation master plan money towards the Aquatic Center at Crawford. And then we also have some aquatics multi-year funds that we allocated 100,000. So that's our three funding sources for the 32.5. This is the master plan on page 5. You can see there are the big purple circles represent the four regional family aquatic centers. So we have three categories of aquatic centers: regional, community, and neighborhood. This is the plan adopted by the Park Board in 2015. There are four regional centers shown by the four circles. And then on the left side of the screen, the text in green indicates the projects that will be funded in the Phase 1 implementation. So Samuel Grand, Crawford, and Fretz, three of the four purple circles. The community facilities are the next size down, and I'll show you the schematic design for each of these so you'll understand what goes into a regional, what goes into a community, and what goes into a neighborhood. So there's three community family aquatic centers in the master plan. Those are the smaller green circles on the map, and we're funding two of those three in the Phase 1 implementation. And then finally, the neighborhood family aquatic centers, which are the four smallest red circles that with color shading. And we're funding one out of the four in the Phase 1 master plan. Then, in addition, there are four spray grounds, which are the circles that are shown with the other spray grounds, the existing spray grounds, so that at the end of the day, this would be what our aquatic system looks like with Phase 1 and Phase 2 funded. Page 6 is, again, a summary of what is included in Phase 1 at the top left of the screen. Again, three regionals, two community, and one neighborhood family aquatic center. In Phase 2, which would be potentially funded through 2017 bond program, we would add one community family aquatic center, three neighborhood family aquatic centers, and four spray grounds. It was envisioned that the spray grounds could be funded also out of revenues and incomes from implementing Phase 1, that's building the three regional centers in the first phase, that the revenues from those three centers could fund all or part of the spray grounds, but we went ahead and included it in our needs inventory for the bond program because they could potentially be built more quickly with bond funding. And then we also have in phase three, a future phase recommendation for a regional family aquatic center at Bachman. The reason it's not in an earlier phase is because we currently have a park maintenance center on the site proposed for the aquatic center, and we just want to make sure that it gets a little longer term, gets moved off-site and the site vacated for the construction of a regional at Bachman. Page 7 describes the input process that we went through in 2016. We had several rounds of meetings. The first round in January, February were to receive input on the program from the public, also the amenities and the features for these family aquatic centers. And then we had a second round a couple of months later where we presented the conceptual designs for those centers based on the input from the programmatic meetings that we held. And we were able to, I think, address and incorporate almost all of the desired features that were presented, that were discussed with the public. Right now, we're about 50% complete with construction documents for phase one, so that's all six, three regionals, two community, one neighborhood. We're 50% complete with the construction documents. We've been able to incorporate the design features that were presented to the public. And I'd like to point out that regardless of the size of the aquatic center, whether it's regional, community, or neighborhood, all of them have the same size or equivalent size children's pools and shade structures, regardless of the category. So now what I'd like to do is take you through very quickly the schematic designs for the six centers. I'm going to only dwell on the first one just so I can point out the features of a typical regional center. And then I'll also point out some of the differences of the community and neighborhood as we go through this. So the first one that I'm showing you is Crawford Regional. This is a new aquatic center. There is currently no pool on this site. So this is the only facility that would be brand new and not replacing an existing pool. It's on the south end of Crawford Memorial Park in Southeast Dallas, Council District 5. It would include a new parking lot, 100-space parking lot. So that's it's a little extra cost on this one that some of the other regional centers don't have. This gives you an overall idea of the footprint, impact on the park with the parking lot, and then the layout of about the same size as the parking lot of the aquatic center itself. The next slide shows the detail of the aquatic center, and I'd like to take you through this now, and I'm going to use a pointer over here, and I may switch it back over here just to be fair. So looking again, the parking lot is on top of the screen. The aquatic center, again, this is a regional aquatic center on the bottom. The bathhouse consists of a sizable mechanical enclosure, restrooms, two family restrooms, and a public entrance, and then a concession, administrative office, and ticketing area. The aquatic features, starting on the left side of the screen and working our way to the right, include, for the regional centers, an 8-lane lap pool. There's also a plunge, and that lap pool has a 1-meter diving board. So we're bringing diving boards back to our aquatic system. All the boards have been removed for years and years and years. So we're coming back with a diving board. Then this is called a plunge pool, which also is multipurpose and can be used for swim lessons, which will be both in the plunge pool and in the shallow end of the lap lane pool. Then we have two body slides in the regional center. This is the children's pool with a zero entry depth kind of beach and a structure and some spray features at the entrance points. This is about a 200-foot-long lazy river, which has been very successful at Bahama Beach, a cold water spa, which allows people to sit around the edges and not be out with a tube in the lazy river. And in this area, connected to the lazy river, is a floating crossing activity where children can learn balance and things like that by hanging on to an overhead cable as they walk across these floating objects here. You'll also notice there's a lot of green space and turf that's incorporated within the fence line, and so a lot of grass, and in shade structures in various places, chase lounges, et cetera. The effect that we're trying to achieve here is that of sort of a resort quality aquatic center that you would experience at a hotel resort. The next slide just shows a quick rendering of the bathhouse for a Crawford from the parking lot. Now we'll move on to the Fretz Regional Aquatic Center. Again, the site plan, it's in the same location as the existing pool, so it will be replacing that pool on the west side of Fretz Park. This is the new library that has been recently greatly expanded and renovated. Tennis and in the existing rec center is here. So very similar features. Then a blow-up plan of Fretz, all the features, the sizes of the bodies of water, and the amenities are all almost identical with the other regionals. One thing I want to point out here is there's a lot of very beautiful live oak trees on this site that we're it's our objective and goal is to retain all of those trees. The perspective rendering on page 13 shows a facility that is fitting in with the architectural character of the new library. So we're taking our cues from the design of the library. And then the final family aquatic center is at Samuel Grand Park. Again, this is also on the site, if we could go to the next slide, of the existing pool, which sits down in a kind of a hollow at Samuel Grand, adjacent to an existing parking lot. There's an existing bathhouse that we're going to retain in this location. The difference here, added cost, is that we have to provide an ADA accessible drive and drop-off point at the entrance to the pool. So that's a feature that Fretz doesn't need. And then here's a blow-up plan on the next slide of Samuel Grand. Again, this is the existing bathhouse. Here we're adding a new bathhouse with offices, concessions, restrooms, and then a new mechanical building. Otherwise, all of the aquatic facilities here are almost identical in size to what we've seen at Crawford and at Fretz. And then a rendering from the pool side of Samuel Grand Pool shows the existing late 1940s, early 50s kind of modern building with stone and concrete deck, and we're incorporating those design elements into the new bathhouse so that it will blend in very well. And you can get a feel at this eye-level view for the quality of the experience and going again towards a sort of a resort-style aquatic center. Now we're going to move into the two community family aquatic centers that are in phase one. The first of these is a Kid Springs, which replaces an existing pool in the same location. This is the recreation center and a very modest addition that was funded in the 2006 bond program. And we played up on that addition in the rendering that I'll show you in just a moment. The big difference here is that when we go from a regional center to a community center, community aquatic center, the lap lanes drop from 8 lanes to 6 lanes. And then at a neighborhood center, they go to 4 lanes. So that's sort of the tiered hierarchy. Otherwise, everything's pretty much very similar. The slides are slightly smaller on the community center. The shade is the same, and the children's activity pool is the same. So, again, trying to maximize the turf area, capitalize on the beautiful trees at Kid Springs. We heard loud and clear we've got a great active swim team at Kid Springs, so we certainly incorporated their comments and input into the layout and design of the 6-lane lap pool here. And then the next slide shows the perspective of the bathhouse, again, taking its architectural clues from the latest addition to the recreation center and to the original. There's some elements of this that also relate to the original recreation center at Kid Springs. And then the next community family aquatic center is at Lake Highlands North in Council District 10. This is on the north side of the site on Church Road. This is the existing recreation center at the bottom of the slide, the existing pool, which is actually, I believe, our newest pool in the Dallas, one of the newest pools in the park system. That will come out completely when we replace it with this. Also, a new parking lot here with spaces off of Church Road that will also serve the picnic pavilion, the play area, the playground, and the spray ground, an existing spray ground down here. So this is badly needed parking for the entire park that we have the opportunity to build as part of the layout for this aquatic center. And then the next slide shows the enlarged plan for the aquatic center. Again, six-lane lap pool, similar to Kitt Springs, and many of the other exact same elements that we've seen before. And then the next slide shows a rendering from Church Road of the bathhouse, a very striking image for all of our aquatic centers, I think. And then the smallest size aquatic center, funded in phase one, is the Neighborhood Aquatic Center. This at Tichy Park in Council District 14. It's a very, very popular neighborhood community pool, existing pool in the same location that's shown here. We have a number of historic buildings from the 1930s that have been renovated, including a pavilion and the existing pool house. You can see the lap pool now is at four lanes. So neighborhood size lap pool is four, community is six, regional is eight. So four lane lap pool. However, the children's pool is the same size as the community and neighborhood pools. Also, some beautiful trees at Tietze and a nice turf area that we're incorporating within the fence line that you see here. The existing entrance to Tietze is at the old bathhouse here. We're moving that around to the entrance from the west side through a plaza and the oak trees here. This will be the concession stand in the existing historic building. And we're building a new mechanical building over here on the east side of the park adjacent to the neighborhood. And rendering of, let's see, I don't think we have a rendering of Tietze. All right, then page 25 is the schedule that we're currently operating under. Again, we're 50% through with construction documents. Those will be completed in December and be briefed to the Park and Recreation Board asking for their approval of plans and specs so that we can advertise, which we will do in January, and that will be we'll be advertising all six family aquatic centers in two packages. Our proposal is to award and start construction of package one in 2017. You can see those will be the three regionals, and then package two would commence in May of 2018, we'll award the contract in 2018. I'll go into the construction here in a minute. The reason we're separating those out is because we are concerned that there is probably no capacity in the construction industry to build all six at one time. So we're splitting them out, doing the three big ones first, of which will help our revenues and our cost recovery for the entire pool system. We can use that money to maybe build some spray grounds or continue to patch and mend our existing community pools. And then we'll build the second set of pools starting in 2018. So that we'll begin construction of Crawford in July of 2017. We can do that one first because there's no pool to take out. It's a new pool. Then after the swim season in next summer of 2017, we can begin construction of the new regional aquatic centers at Pretz and Samuel Grand. So we'll go through the pool season first and then start construction of those two after the pool season. And then we'll begin construction of the those will be completed. I'm sorry, all three will be completed in April in time for the pool season, the swim season of 2018. Then we will begin construction of the two community aquatic centers and neighborhood aquatic center at Tietze after the pool season in 2018 and have those completed in time for the pool swim season in 2019. That completes the briefing, and I will be glad, and Louise and Mark, to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Winters. Questions? Okay. Mr. McGue.
Can you give us a timeline on the demo of the existing pools, specifically to Lake Collins North, as it ties in with the construction of the community center?
So we'll start construction of the new pool after this pool season of 2018. So really the and we wouldn't start the demolition of the existing pool until after that pool season as well. So it could, whether it may be part of the construction contract to demolish that pool, so probably in the fall of 2018 is when that pool would come out.
So we won't have, there'll be an overlap. We'll have the pool each pool season.
Absolutely, yeah. Our goal is to keep all of the pools that are being replaced in service through each of the two summers.
Okay. And are we keeping everything within our budget?
We are experiencing construction escalation, as every project is in Dallas-Fort Worth. So right now we are over budget, but we are, that's one, and we are proposing to request supplemental funding in the 2017 bond program to address that shortage.
And what is that amount?
It's about $7.3 million for all of them together.
And how will that potentially impact the timelines that we're looking at on slide 25?
If there's funding included in the bond program and it passes, then there won't be any impact. And we'll just have to make sure the bonds are for those three centers are sold in time to award the construction contract.
Okay, if for whatever reason it's not included in the bond package, what happens to the timelines?
Then we'll have to address that with the park. We have to present some options to the Park and Recreation Board. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other questions? Did a good job, obviously. Thank you. We'll take our afternoon speakers.
Thank you. We have two registered afternoon speakers. Stevie Howey, not present. Reggie Ruffin, not present. This concludes your afternoon speakers.
Oh, meetings adjourned, 1:29 p.m. Thank you. I'm trying to cut everybody off.